guest, or I'm honored to be your host today. Thank you so very much for giving me part of your day. This show has been sponsored in part by Eco Design Resources of Santa Cruz, located just off the Santa Cruz Mall. They're having a liquidation sale, so drop by to find out some deals. Remember, tomorrow really matters. Tell a friend. And stay tuned for the Peter B. Collins Show coming up next after.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News. I'm Harley Carnes. The combat reinforcements are coming home from Iraq on schedule for the summer.
The president made a decision to draw down the five surge brigades, the two Marine battalions, by July of this year.
Lieutenant General Carter Ham says they're on schedule, and it'll leave 140,000 troops in Iraq, which includes an additional 8,000 support troops to fill in Iraqi force gaps that weren't there before the surge began. On the politics of the Iraq strategy and the race for president, Democrat Hillary Clinton says John McCain's got it wrong.
He said he wants to keep our troops in Iraq. We'd be fine with him for 50 to 100 years. I will start bringing them home within 60 days.
McCain says troops will be in Iraq just as they are in Korea and Germany and other strategic locations around the world.
My friends, the war will be over soon. The war, for all intents and purposes, although the insurgency will go on for years and years and years, but it'll be handled by the Iraqis, not by us.
Don't expect Hillary Clinton to knock off the who's prepared to lead pitch anytime soon. It's resonating, according to a new CBS News New York Times poll. Asked who's most prepared to lead, John McCain's far out in front, but it's Hillary Clinton in front of Obama on that question.
73% of registered voters overall think that John McCain is prepared to be president. A majority, 57%, think Hillary Clinton is also prepared to be president. But 56% think that Barack Obama needs more time before he's ready for the presidency.
CBS News Deputy Survey Director Sarah Dutton. The poll also found 56% of people confident in McCain's ability to handle an international crisis. Neither Clinton nor Obama broke 50% on that one, but people did have more faith in Obama in a crisis than Clinton. Sales of existing homes went down again in January, and prices are down another 4.5%. Greg McBride at Bankrate.com.
Even though January saw some of the lowest mortgage rates in several years, that wasn't enough to bring buyers out of the woodwork to buy existing homes.
One bright spot, sales in Midwestern states were up about 3.4%. The Mega Millions winners came forward to get their winning ticket validated today.
Grandma, you think you can afford me a dirt bike now? I said, I think so.
Tanya and Robert Harris in Portal, Georgia, won't be living in a mobile home much longer. They'll buy a house, they say, a Mercedes for her, a truck for him, and take care of their family with $164 million. The world would be better off if we ate more bugs. You've heard this before, but it's the UN's Food and Agriculture Organization saying at this time there are 1,400 species of insects and worms that are eaten deliberately in 90 countries in Africa, Latin America, and Asia. Lots of protein and roughage, too. On Wall Street, the Dow up about 189 points on the day. The Nasdaq gained 24. This is CBS News.
In the end, all any of us have is our good name. So at Mercedes-Benz, we don't put our name on just anything. Every certified pre-owned Mercedes-Benz comes with a 155-point inspection, roadside assistance, a one-year warranty up to 100,000 miles, and the one thing no other pre-owned vehicle can offer: our good name. Mercedes-Benz. Stop by your local authorized dealer and ask about our certified pre-owned program.
See dealer for complete details on warranty and roadside assistance. Abbreviated inspection applicable to vehicles less than 15 months old with less than 18,000 miles.
Jackson, go tell Brinkman to speed things up on the job site.
That's a long way, boss, but I'm on my way. Message delivered, sir.
One more thing. Run back and tell him to...
We really need Nextel Direct Connect. I think I pulled a hammy.
Connect at the touch of a button with Nextel Direct Connect from Sprint. Get the rugged new i570 by Motorola. Just $69.99 for your business accounts. Visit Sprint.com/Nextel or call 1-800-SPRINT-1. Sprint. Ends 4/19/08. Excludes taxes. Subject to two-year agreement. Up to $36 activation, $200 early termination fees. Credit approval and deposit. Available corporate liable activations and eligible upgrades only. Restrictions apply. See store for details.
Oscar, the Academy Award Show. What were you doing last night?
What? Last night's host, John Stewart.
What happened?
On ABC, he might have been talking about the audience that stayed away. The initial TV ratings show 33% of households with TV sets on watched the Oscars, 33% down from 42% last year, likely to be the lowest audience share ever. Maybe because most of the winners were arty, not big box office movies, many murderous and depressing.
Does this town need a hug?
Dan Revive, CBS News.
In the Northwest, where the gray wolf is back and the Interior Department is taking it off the endangered list, in South Africa, efforts to save elephants have come to the point. They say there's so many they'll allow hunting again. When the number was down to 8,000, some worried they'd all die off. Now, with 20,000 elephants and growing, the government says some of the population must be managed. It, too, is controversial. Harley Carnes, CBS News.
Today's most fuel-efficient mid-size cars can get about 30 miles per gallon. In a hybrid car, about 50 miles per gallon. But the CSX trains that bring those cars to you, they can move a ton of freight, 423 miles, on a single gallon of fuel. Too bad we can't all drive a train. Go to CSX.com to learn more about our commitment to protecting the environment. CSX, how tomorrow moves.
You know, a wise man once said, "Do what you love and you won't have to work a day in your life." Of course, small business owners know that doing what you love sometimes involves doing things you don't love, like the finances. That's why more small business owners turn to Visa Business. It has multiple payment options like credit and debit that are accepted in millions of locations worldwide. And it helps reduce paperwork by tracking your finances. To see more ways Visa can help, go to visa.com/small business. Business takes Visa.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. Infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show today, launching into a new week. We've got a lot to talk about, and no shortage of great people to talk about it with, including you.
I was walking home down the alley when a face I'll never see came forth from deep in the darkness, and his mouth came off to me. And I saw that he'd be liquor, and he'd take us to you.
We're going to kick off the show today with Ken Silverstein, Washington editor for Harper's Magazine. He's got a piece in the new issue all about how politicians raise all that political money and then spend it whining and dining and staying in fancy hotels. The article's called Beltway Bacchanal. Also on today's program from the ACLU, Jesselyn McCurdy joins us in about half an hour. We're going to talk about the efforts to end the disparity in criminal sentences for possession of crack or possession of powder cocaine. It's an issue that has been developing and turning into a tragic track record for a long time, and we're going to talk about what it takes to unravel that. Next hour, change of the guard in Cuba. Fidel has stepped down, and his brother is the new boss there on the island. Saul Landau, filmmaker and a professor at American University, will join us next hour. We're also going to take a look at California's red ink, $16 billion and counting. John Laird is the assemblyman from Santa Cruz and chair of the budget committee in the state assembly. He'll be with us in the next hour. And then in the free speech zone, wide open for your phone calls, we'll see who watched the Oscars and who watched 60 Minutes last night. A powerful story about Don Siegelman, the former Democratic governor of Alabama, who is now a federal inmate. And his route there
Well, let's just say it was greased and eased and facilitated by Karl Rove and friends of his. 60 Minutes did an okay job reporting the story last night, but Harper's Magazine, Scott Horton has been all over it, and our friend Larissa Alexandrovna from RawStory.com has done a great job reporting it, too. We'll discuss that in our free speech zone, plus Hillary fighting on after the conciliatory approach she took in last week's debate in Texas. And Ralph Nader is running for president again. Do you care? And do you remember Harold Stassen? And is he trying to compete for the Guinness World Book of Records to surpass Harold Stassen's record? I think he ran for president 6 times. That's all ahead. You can join the conversation whenever you like, toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. And a warning to the nation, I'm doing double duty, 3 hours here, and then I get a dinner break, and then I'll be doing 3 hours tonight, sitting in for John Elliott, Coast to Coast on Air America Radio, available on many of these same stations or at airamerica.com. And my first guest here today has been foolish enough to agree to be my first guest tonight on Air America, Ken Silverstein, the Washington editor of Harper's Magazine. Hello, Ken.
Hello.
How you doing today?
I'm pretty well. How are you?
Not too bad. Not too bad. Fascinating piece that you have in the new issue.
Thanks.
And my interest is heightened by the story last week about John McCain. And he's the straight talker, the guy who, you know, passed campaign finance to the dismay of many of his Republican friends. And he's now caught up in a scandal about a lobbyist friend of his and whether he did or did not intervene, for example, with the FCC over an issue of Paxson Communications. How is that playing inside the Beltway right now? Is the Times losing to the McCain retort machine?
I think so, because the problem is that the Times piece sort of led with this obviously very, I was going to call it a sexy allegation, which may be the wrong term here, but it hinted very strongly at a romantic relationship
right.
between McCain and this lobbyist, and the entire, you know, everything else sort of seemed to be, I have to agree, even with conservative commentators, that everything else seemed to be sort of window dressing, because a lot of it had been touched upon and previously reported. And so, you know, basically it became a story about did he have an affair with a telecom lobbyist, which wasn't proved by this story,
right.
And hence it became a he said, she said situation. So, you know, obviously, without direct proof, it's a little shaky. And then, you know, I mean, being attacked by the New York Times is a badge of honor for conservatives, and so I think it sort of rallied support for McCain. I recall seeing a story that he'd raised a very, very large sum of money in the aftermath of the Times piece, you know, as conservatives rallied to his side. So I don't know. I mean, unless something else comes out to substantiate the allegations of an affair, I think that particular piece just gets buried as, you know, a sort of unfair piece on McCain. I don't think it'll have any impact unless something else comes out.
So do you think there was something juicy or sleazy there and the lawyers made them take it out? You've probably had stories that got hacked up by lawyers.
I don't think that's what happened. I mean, look, I'm speculating, but I don't think they proved it. I don't think, you know, this is the thing about these sorts of stories, which, you know, I think should be reported if they're true, incidentally. I mean, obviously, if he did have an affair with a telecom lobbyist and there was any favoritism towards her clients, that's a huge story. But the problem is, you know, proving an affair is an extremely difficult thing to do. I mean, there really aren't many people who have direct knowledge about it, obviously. You know, and so unless someone was incredibly indiscreet, and I mean, look, I'm not saying that, you know, there was an affair because I don't know.
I don't know either.
But I don't think it was lawyered, and that's why they didn't run with it. I don't think they could prove it. I spoke to, in fact, I did a short item on our blog about it. I spoke to Ed Pound, who's used to be at U.S. News and World Report, and early in 2007, he worked very, very hard on this story. He didn't really want to get into a lot of detail, but it was clear that he had worked hard on this story, and he could not prove that there had been an affair,
mm-hmm.
and hence he didn't go with it. So I suspect that the Times worked very hard to find definitive proof and just didn't get it. I mean, why would a lawyer take out something that could have substantiated the most sensational charge in the piece. So yeah. I don't think that's what happened. I know that's been floated, but...
Okay, I hear you. Yeah. Now, the other part of it is I read the article twice very carefully. I felt that the allusions to any romantic relationship were unnecessary, and that the real thread there was that it was an opportunity to revisit the Keating Five and McCain's role in intervening on behalf of financiopath Charles Keating back there in the 1980s when he had first come to the Senate. The relationship between his wife Cindy and Keating, they were business partners in a shopping mall in Phoenix. And the more recent issues, again, not about what this lobbyist may have done personally with John McCain, but the role that she played in getting him to rub up against ethics issues regarding his lobbying for clients of hers.
I'm not even going to comment on your description of rubbing up against ethics issues. However, no, I agree with you. I mean, I think that there is a very serious issue that the Times story raised, and which has been raised elsewhere, which is John McCain's relationship with special interest groups and lobbyists, which he has always portrayed himself as a fierce opponent of these special interests. And yet, as we've seen, his campaign is dominated, really, by lobbyists who are running the campaign and who are surrounding McCain. That's a fair, legitimate issue that really needs to be discussed. And unfortunately, I think, because the sort of lead to the piece and the focus of, you know, all the attention on the piece was, you know, did the Times prove this story or were they reckless in moving forward? That got lost. But that is a really important, good story that should be looked at, and I think there's more there. But it sort of just got lost in this wave of attention to the question of this possible romantic relationship.
And Ken Silverstein, have you ever heard of a politician repudiating a newspaper endorsement? Would he get more game out of this by saying, "I reject the endorsement of the slimy New York Times"?
I don't think there's anything to be lost ever by a Republican nominee for president to run against the New York Times. I mean, that's pretty much a no-brainer.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I think this story really, certainly in the short term, has rebounded to McCain's benefit. And as I said earlier, unless something comes out to sort of vindicate the Times, I think the story has a short term, in the short term, helps McCain. It helps him raise the money, helps him build support. And in the long term, it's just not going to matter.
Yeah.
But meanwhile, between now and November, I'm sure there will be further scrutiny of the really important issue which you raised, which is his relationship with lobbyists and special interest groups. And has he done favors for those people in the past?
Ken Silverstein with us from Harper's Magazine, and his newest article is called Beltway Bacchanal. And this is really fascinating because most of us are aware that politicians raise large amounts of money, and we imagine that it goes to the political consultants and Dunkin' Donuts. We've seen the bills from the Clinton campaign. But a lot of this money goes to support a lifestyle that is well beyond what our representatives and senators earn. They get about $170,000 in salary now, which ain't bad.
Not bad.
But they spend a lot more, and after we take a break here, I want you to tell us about this fellow Republican Congressman James McCreary from Louisiana. He's kind of your poster child of a guy who can spend up to, what, $16,000 a month of other people's money supporting a lavish lifestyle, lots of golf, lots of wine, and some really nice five-star hotels.
I will be happy to talk about it.
That's coming right up here. Ken Silverstein with us from Harper's Magazine. And if you have a question or comment, feel free to tune in, call in right now. Toll free at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. Thanks for dialing up the Peter B. Collins Show.
You're listening to KRXA 540.
The following is a test of the emergency alert system in accordance with regulations of the Federal Communications Commission. This station is testing its emergency alert system equipment. This is only a test. This has been a test of the emergency alert system. We now return you to regular programming.
Do you want some downtime? A break from work and worry without breaking the bank? At the Dunes and the Spa at Pajaro Dunes in Watsonville will give you the breathing space you need. The Spa at Pajaro Dunes is now open to the general public. Spend an hour being pampered with a warm stone massage or European facial. Gather your friends together for a spa party or surprise your sweetie with a couples massage. Stay for a long, lazy weekend in a luxurious condo at the Dunes with 150 acres of beach and wetlands. You'll have your own ocean view and the price is unbeatable. Only a short drive from anywhere on the Central Coast, relief is only minutes away without the time and expense of a long trip. We'll also simplify your wedding plans. Have your ceremony, guests, and special events all in the same place. In nearby Watsonville, at the Dunes and the Spa at Pajaro Dunes will make your life a little easier and a lot more enjoyable. Call 888-91-DUNES and mention KRXA to get our lowest rates. That's 888-91-DUNES.
Jim Moore Income Tax in Watsonville has been helping Monterey Bay Area residents with personal income tax preparation for more than 20 years. And this year, Manager Juan Gonzalez is prepared to assist all taxpayers take advantage of tax credits and rebates especially targeted for the eco-minded. The staff of Jim Moore Income Tax specializes in fast, professional income tax preparation at a very reasonable price. Do you have a naughty tax problem? Let Juan Gonzalez and his staff provide the expert assistance you need. Jim Moore Income Tax is located at 30 Alexander Street in downtown Watsonville, just two blocks from the Central Plaza. This year, let Juan Gonzalez show you where the green is for green living taxpayers. Visit Jim Moore Income Tax at 30 Alexander Street in downtown Watsonville. Be sure to take copies of your 2006 tax return and all of your 2007 W-2s and 1099s. Remember Jim Moore Income Tax for all of your tax preparation needs.
Dedicated to the proposition that fun, learning, and personal growth go together perfectly, Thinker Toys, with two beautiful stores on the Monterey Peninsula, has an incredible selection of fun and educational toys, games, books, and art supplies for infants to teens. For nearly 40 years, Thinker Toys owner Mark Phillips and his experienced staff have been serving the parents and children of the Central Coast. They can help you choose the perfect gift for the special child in your life. Join Thinker Toys' three generations of satisfied customers, and you'll see why Thinker Toys is the most fun place to shop on the Monterey Peninsula. Open every day. Thinker Toys is at the corner of San Carlos and 7th in Carmel by the Sea, and next to Starbucks in the Del Monte Center in Monterey. You can also order by phone, 831-624-0441. That's 624-0441. Or browse at thinkertoys.com. Dedicated to the proposition that fun, learning, and personal growth go together perfectly, Thinker Toys, with two beautiful stores on the Monterey Peninsula, has an incredible selection of fun and educational toys, games, books, and art supplies for infants to teens. For nearly 40 years, Thinker Toys owner
Every
Mark
Sunday morning at 10, check out Rock Roller Real Estate, America's favorite real estate show. Learn about investing, 1031 exchanges, buying and selling homes, and where the hottest real estate markets are. Rock Roller Real Estate, every Sunday morning at 10. To be a guest, call 408-892-3376. That's 408-892-3376. For more information, stop by our website at rockrollerrealestate.com. Rock Roller Real Estate, Sunday mornings at 10, right here on KRXA 540. Every Sunday morning at 10, check out Rock Roller Real
Estate. Every Sunday morning at 10, check out Rock. Use donor money from political campaigns, mostly to support a pretty high lifestyle, well beyond the $170,000 or though they earn from the taxpayers legitimately as a salary. And your balance here, you take a look at members of both parties, but you go in depth, Ken, on this guy, James McCrary, Republican from Louisiana. You say he has held no post in the Republican leadership, and his national profile is fairly limited. His campaign took in over $3 million in the last few years, and he only spent $7,000 of it to crush his most recent Democratic opponent. And that left a lot of cash for, what, golf outings and fancy hotels?
Yeah, I mean, this is the interesting thing about, you know, I mean, we picked McCreary, I mean, partly just because he had spent, you know, in going through the records, he had spent a whole lot of money. But, you know, the higher up the food chain you go, the more the sort of misappropriation of this money it seems to worsen as you go up the leadership level. But, I mean, it's fairly common throughout. So we took a guy like McCreary, who's not, you know, a national leader in the party. He obviously does not need to be raising money full-time because he has really no effective opposition. As I pointed out in the piece, he did win re-election last time by 40 points. And yet, you know, he's out there constantly on the trail. It's not just for his campaign. Admittedly, it's for these personal leadership packs, which is, they're basically slush funds.
Yeah, because you can accept a $5,000 contribution, which is more than double the maximum a candidate can take.
Well, in fact, as a senator, you can raise basically six times what you can raise through your campaign treasury, because you can take $5,000 a year versus $2,300 per election.
I see.
So yeah, you can raise a whole lot of money, and it's all pretty much unregulated. But in any case, I'm sorry, I'm digressing a little bit. I mean, McCreary just spent an astonishing amount of money on food, drink, entertainment, and fundraisers out of his political funds. So, you know, this guy, he's a big golfer. He was actually listed, there was a piece, it was a couple of years ago in some golf magazine that listed him as one of the top golfers in Washington amongst members of Congress and lobbyists.
Mm-hmm.
Even Supreme Court justices they rated. So he's a big golfer. So he's constantly going out for these fundraisers where, you know, his campaign or his leadership pack organizes the fundraiser, and then he invites big donors, often lobbyists, who come and attend, and, you know, they have a weekend together or a day together on the golf course. And, you know, it's a good time is had by all. But, you know, I mean, he spent, in some cases, up to $50,000 on individual fundraisers. You know, he traveled to a beach resort in San Juan, Puerto Rico, the Rio Mar Beach Resort and Spa, which, you know, according to the resort's website, it lies between a magnificent palm-lined beach and lush mountains, and there's an award-winning staff at your beck and call. You know, there are 11 tennis courts, two oceanfront swimming pools, two championship golf courses.
I can hear the rationale now. It was the only place that had a room available, and he was actually going to Vieques to check out what's left of that firing range.
Well, actually, what's sort of interesting is that McCreary, when I talked to him, was completely non-defensive about the whole thing, which to me is indicative of the bubble that our members of Congress live in. I mean, they just don't get it, I think. I don't believe that the typical constituent of McCreary down in Louisiana in the Shreveport area, which has not been doing very well economically, I would point out, would be terribly sympathetic to his argument, which is, hey, you know, I've been to fundraisers, and I'm just trying to make a memorable event where the donors will come back. You know, I've sort of studied the way this works, and
right.
I want everyone to have a good time. So as he told me, I plead guilty. You know, there's a sense of entitlement that you pick up when talking to members of Congress about this sort of thing. And the idea of, hey, I get paid $170,000, I've got the best health plan in the country, I have amazing fringe benefits, but, you know, if I want to spend $100,000 or a couple of $100,000 on, you know, having a good time and going off on fundraisers to resorts, you know, I'm entitled to do it. So he was, you know, hey, you know, I've got to raise money.
Yeah, and Ken, in a footnote here, you provide the friends and family connection. John Doolittle from here in California, who's decided to retire, we learned about a year and a half ago that his wife, Julie, gets 15% of every contribution that comes into either his campaign or his leadership PAC. And we're a community property state. I really think that could be seen as, you know, illegal income to the congressman. But also, Barbara Boxer pays her own son $72,000 a year to run her campaign. We know Maxine Waters has a grandchild on, I believe, the federal payroll, which is not apparently an explicit violation of the rules yet. But
no, there are so many different ways in which members of Congress can basically legally, for the most part, funnel money to themselves and to their family members. I mean, a case I cited was David Scott from Georgia, who, you know, this is really astonishing. I mean, he won office in 2002, and since then, he's paid from his political funds more than $600,000 to his wife and his two daughters, his son-in-law, and to an advertising firm that he owns. I mean, it's just, you know, it's a way of doing very well financially.
Yeah. We got to run to a break here. Ken Silverstein, thanks. We'll talk to you again tonight.
Thank you.
And thanks for doing double duty with us. I appreciate that. Ken Silverstein, Washington editor for Harper's Magazine. Coming up next, the difference between crack and coke.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
The Osgood File, sponsored in part by Walgreens, the pharmacy America has trusted since 1901, and by the Coop from Verizon Wireless, with a big keypad and easy-to-read screen. It's a hassle-free phone that's easy to use. I'm Charles Osgood. The music is from George Gershwin's An American in Paris. Lots of Americans go to Paris, but hardly any Americans ever go to Pyongyang, North Korea. But that's where the members of the New York Philharmonic are right now, to play this and other music tomorrow night before people who've never heard American musicians play before or even seen an American movie. The story after this. Whether you kept your old Medicare Part D plan or switched to a new one, why not fill all your prescriptions at Walgreens? They've been in the pharmacy business for over 100 years, and millions of seniors turn to them for their Medicare prescription needs. Walgreens accepts all major Medicare Part D plans, and they offer a menu of services you won't find anywhere else. Find out what they can do for you. Transfer your prescriptions today. Just give Walgreens the information on your prescription bottle, and they'll take care of the rest. If you're finally retired, and now you can do all the things you've been wanting to do but never had the time, being on the go, you will need a cell phone that you can rely on. But you probably don't want to have to deal with some complicated phone with lots of tiny buttons. Verizon Wireless has just the phone for you. It's called the Coop. It's got a big keypad, easy-to-read screen, and dedicated buttons for emergency contact. And since it's backed by the Good Housekeeping Seal and Verizon Wireless, you know it's reliable. The Coop from Verizon Wireless. It's everything you need and nothing you don't. To learn more, call 1-800-JOIN-IN today or visit a Verizon Wireless store near you. What is the New York Philharmonic Orchestra doing in North Korea? Conductor and music director Lauren Mazel.
The invitation was tendered us by the North Korean government, which means that they too are looking for a common ground where we can interact without political agendas and without overtones, connotations, and what have you.
Don't look for any sudden political epiphany.
Kim Jong-il, the ruler of North Korea, is not suddenly going to hear the symphony play Mozart and say, you know, here we are. We're now Jeffersonian Democrats.
Stephen Bosworth is a former U.S. ambassador to South Korea. There is no American ambassador in North Korea. Why is Kim doing this?
He knows he needs relief from the outside in terms of economic resources. But he also has to be very cautious about how much he opens to the outside world, lest his people learn how badly disadvantaged they have been.
Yet music hath charms, and Glenn Dichterow, the New York Philharmonic concertmaster, says the musicians are pleased to bring the gift of music.
The openness is the most important issue here. This is going to be the groundbreaking start of the whole thing, you know, making music together and playing for the people. I think, you know, this will be a great, great contribution.
The Osgood File. Charles Osgood on the CBS Radio Network.
Attention all KRXA listeners. Are you worried about not having enough money for a truly comfortable retirement? Were you aware that you've had the ability to buy real estate within your individual retirement account without government penalty since 1974? Bet you didn't know that. Only 2% of the U.S. population is even aware of the law. If your IRA had been invested in California real estate 20 years ago, you'd be a multimillionaire today. The retirement specialist will show you how to purchase California property right inside your IRA. They've helped nearly 10,000 people in the last four decades achieve their retirement goals by rolling over their IRAs and 401ks into profitable California real estate. Give them a call at 831-794-8485 to learn more about this underutilized retirement investment. That's 831-794-8485. If you want to achieve financial independence by the time you retire, then call now. There's nothing to lose, only valuable knowledge to gain. Call 831-794-8485 and ask for the retirement specialist.
Hello, I'm Johnny Cash.
Time for more on the Peter B. Collins Show.
I hear the train a-coming, it's rolling around a bend, and I ain't seen the sunshine since I don't know when. I'm stuck in Folsom Prison, and time keeps dragging on. But that train keeps rolling on down the San Antone.
As the Peter B. Collins Show picks up additional radio stations, we also broadcast within range of many prison facilities, including Folsom.
But I shot a man in Reno.
Vacaville. There are two prisons there. San Quentin here in the San Francisco Bay Area. Soledad in the Monterey area. And Pelican Bay, north of Eureka in Crescent City. And behind bars in each one of those institutions, you will find men who are serving very different sentences for rather similar crimes. Say one guy was a stockbroker who lived in the suburbs, and he got popped for possession and use of, oh, let's just say a gram of cocaine. And right down the cell block might be a guy from South Central or some other hood who was dealing crack. And let's just say he had about the same amount of crack as that stockbroker from the suburbs had in powder cocaine. We'll get a more accurate estimate here in a moment, but I believe it's a minimum 5-1, if not 10-1, the disparities in those two hypothetical sentences. Well, there's an effort to try to fix this situation. Once again, the ACLU is on the front lines trying to protect and expand our civil rights in this country. Jesselyn McCurdy joins us, legislative counsel from ACLU's Washington office. Welcome, Jesselyn.
Thank you for having me, Peter.
Well, it's a pleasure to talk about this because this is something that I've been burning about for a long time. Let's talk a little bit about the history of this before we get into the actual disparities right now.
Sure.
As I recall, this really was propelled by the death of Len Bias.
That's right. That's absolutely right.
A basketball star who went to a party and did too much cocaine and died from it.
That's right.
And if I recall correctly, too, a guy who just recently exited the presidential campaign on the Democratic side, Joe Biden, was a champion of the original bill that ratcheted up these penalties for crack way out of proportion with the penalties for powder coke.
Peter, you have a great memory.
And why didn't anybody bring that up for Joe Biden during the past campaign?
Well, because Senator Biden is trying to amend his ways and has introduced a bill that will correct the wrong that he supported back 20 years ago.
Well, tell me about this, because I have never heard Senator Biden talk about it, and I'm not gunning for him. I mm-hmm. respect him on many fronts, but this is the one that I haven't to date because I felt he never addressed the barbaric sentences that he helped impose.
And so there was a hearing back in 2 weeks ago in the Senate Judiciary Committee that Senator Biden chaired, and he made the statement that he acknowledged that he was part of the problem back 20 years ago and has now introduced a bill that would make the sentences the same on the federal level for both powder and crack cocaine. And he acknowledged that he's trying to basically reconcile himself for what happened 20 years ago. He realizes we know more about the drug, crack cocaine, than we did 20 years ago, that there was a lot of hysteria, mm-hmm. particularly around the death of Len Bias, as you correctly point out, because Len Bias was a former University of Maryland basketball star drafted by the Boston Celtics. 3 days after the NBA draft, he died of a cocaine overdose, originally thought to be a crack cocaine overdose. And that's what started the frenzy in Congress around ratcheting up the penalties for crack cocaine versus mm-hmm. powder cocaine.
And you just said allegedly. Do we know what Len Bias actually did?
We actually did. We ultimately came out that Len Bias actually died of a powder cocaine overdose. It's
really?
Not a crack cocaine overdose.
But
by the time all that information came out, these harsh laws were already passed, and now we're 20 years down the road and we're trying to do something about it.
Mm-hmm. Jesselyn, let me just pause for a moment here because you made my day a moment ago. It delights me to hear that Joe Biden has recognized that mistake and is trying to address it. I think it's very late, but I always appreciate when people will express that kind of disappointment or remorse or however he might characterize it and try to make amends. It's all too rare.
That's right. You got to give him credit for that.
Yeah. Now take us back here and fill in the blank here, because I offered this hypothetical scenario of two guys doing hard time in a California penitentiary.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, they'd be more likely in a federal pen because these are federal laws.
Yes.
But what is the exact disparity between sentencing for powder versus crack.
That's right. So the disparity is actually 100 to 1.
Ouch.
So you get a hundred more harsher sentence. The sentence is more harsher, 100 times more harsher for crack cocaine than it is for powder cocaine. So, for example, if a person is convicted of selling 5 grams of crack cocaine, they get a 5-year mandatory minimum sentence in the federal system. But it takes 500 grams of powder cocaine to trigger that same 5-year mandatory sentence in the federal system.
Wow. I mean, just on the face of it, that is so absurd.
It is, and again, it was enacted around the hysteria of Lynn Bias's death, around the fact that crack cocaine back over 20 years ago was infiltrating urban areas around the country, and I equate crack cocaine 20 years ago to meth a few years ago, in kind of the same type of hysteria, not to the level of hysteria that existed around crack cocaine, existed around meth, but it's basically, it was an unknown quantity. Meth was an unknown quantity as crack cocaine was over 20 years ago.
Right.
And so that was something that Congress was struggling with and trying to respond to, and responded pretty more quickly than they have in any other situation that I know of around criminal justice issues, and unfortunately responded in the wrong way.
Yeah. And Jesselyn, it really pains me, because those of us who try to argue for a rational approach to these obviously disparate sentences are written off as either people who think drugs aren't a serious problem, mm-hmm. you know, and we're just liberals who, you know, want to live and let live, or we are seen as insufficiently concerned about the safety of our children and our communities. And none of that is relevant here to this debate. There's a fundamental issue of justice, fairness, and, a due process that doesn't discriminate against individuals because of their economic background or other circumstances. And this is a class and race-based system of determining sentences, and it's one of the ugliest things we've seen as an outgrowth of the so-called war on drugs.
Mm-hmm. That's absolutely right. I mean, there's so many things that I want to address in that statement.
Well, then you go right ahead. Take a couple of minutes here. I won't interrupt you.
And the first is that you're absolutely right in terms of the context of the war on drugs, and what we all think the war on drugs should be about is, I think, stopping the flow of drugs into the country. I think that's kind of the basic assumption of people. But this crack cocaine law is a perfect example of how that's gone awry. And while Congress, when they initially enacted the law, that was their goal, and that was they specifically said their goal was to deal with the high-level importers and the high-level dealers of crack cocaine. But ultimately, because the trigger level for a 5-year sentence is so low, 5 grams of crack cocaine, ultimately what has happened is it's an incentive for law enforcement to focus on street-level dealers and low-level dealers, particularly federal law enforcement, and not focus on the higher-level importers of cocaine into the country. And so that does nothing to address the war on drugs, because what happens is you wipe a bunch of low-level street dealers off the streets for 5 or 10 years, but the flow of drugs is still coming in the country, so there's just another generation of dealers, street-level dealers, who replaced that generation that you wiped off, but you never deal with the flow of drugs into the country. And so that, I think, is the failure of the war on drugs, and this is a perfect example of it.
Well, and also what can happen, Jesselyn, is people who are just barely involved, like a poster, a kid who is given a post on a corner and said, told to call this number if you see cops coming. Or the girlfriend
mm-hmm.
who answered the phone and said, oh, Bubba's at the gas. I mean, this is an actual case.
That's right.
Where a woman answered the phone, said, oh, my boyfriend is ready to meet you over at the gas station. She hung up, and she ended up behind like an 18-year federal stretch.
That's right.
And the boyfriend who plea bargained out ended up with a 2 or 3 year sentence, and he's the one who actually did the drug
exactly.
transaction.
Exactly. Peter, you bring up a great point, and this is another flaw in the way these laws play out on the federal level, particularly. Because we're not really dealing with the higher level dealers. And the thing that in the federal system particularly that is of value to prosecutors is providing cooperation. And that gets people credit and lessens their sentence. What happens is you have people like the boyfriend. We often call this the girlfriend problem. So where a girlfriend has very tangential relationship to any type of drug dealing, but because she doesn't have any information to deal with the prosecutor on, she gets a worse sentence than the boyfriend who actually was dealing the drugs, and he's running around telling on people and snitching on people, and then he gets a reduced sentence. But since the girlfriend doesn't have any information to trade with the prosecutors, she gets a harsher sentence than the boyfriend. Huge problem. And it's really, not only is it around the substantive law around crack cocaine, but it's around these drug conspiracy laws, because that's how they get, like, girlfriends and people that are tangentially involved in drug dealing convicted of these crimes, because they get them for conspiracy on the federal level. So you don't have to even have held a packet or an ounce of cocaine or crack cocaine to get convicted of conspiracy.
Yeah, yeah. It's just mind-boggling. Jesselyn McCurdy is our guest, legislative counsel at the ACLU's Washington office. If you have a comment or a question, you know somebody who's in a situation like this, give us a call toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B. 888-573-8372. Now, Jesselyn, help me remember, because as I recall, it was last fall that the U.S. Sentencing Commission finally came to grips with this issue and provided new guidelines for federal judges regarding sentencing.
That is correct.
But that only permits them what are called downward departures from the sentences that have been pronounced in the legislation from the Congress. So is the second step in fixing this big problem to rewrite the legislation in conformity with the sentencing guidelines?
Absolutely. So what happened last year, this was an ongoing process last year, but to make a bad matter worse, on top of the very harsh mandatory minimum sentences that many crack cocaine offenders receive for very small amounts of drugs, once you, even beyond your mandatory minimum sentence, when you're in federal court, a judge will sentence you based on the sentencing guidelines. So you have mandatory minimum sentences, and you have the sentencing guidelines that judges actually use to determine your actual sentence. Well, if the mandatory minimum sentences weren't harsh enough, judges, the guidelines that judges use to actually mete out your sentence were even harsher than the mandatory minimum sentence. So, for example, if I got caught with 5 or 6 grams of crack cocaine and went to federal court, the law said, the law that Congress passed said I should get 5 years. But once the judge went to the sentencing guidelines to sentence me, he gave me anywhere from 5 years to 3 months to 6.5 years, because that's what the sentencing guidelines told him he had to give me. So that added even more time to many of these people's sentences and contributed to the disparity that exists in the federal system. So what the Sentencing Commission decided to do is correct that wrong and make their guidelines consistent with the mandatory minimum sentences. And then not only did they decide to do that proactively, they decided to do that retroactively. So people who are now in prison for crack cocaine offenses will have an opportunity to have a judge relook at their sentence and determine whether or not they'd be eligible for release a year or two earlier. But let me emphasize, these people will still have served long mandatory minimums, even with the changes that the Sentencing Commission has made, and that's why we need Congress to act.
All right, we're going to take a break and return with Jesselyn McCurdy. If you have a question or comment, join us now, toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B. In the next segment, we'll tell you about a hearing scheduled for tomorrow in the Senate. More on this issue in a moment on the Peter B. Collins Show.
You're listening to the new KRXA 540.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services.
In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
Hey, it's Sheila Gale with 2 hours of talk radio all about our daily challenges, our fears, changes, crisis, addictions. Over 1,700 of them, can you believe it? Using the 12 steps, the law of attraction, whatever it takes. Join me Saturday afternoons 3 to 5 with my guests and we'll find solutions together. The Sheila Show, Saturday 3 to 5 on KRXA, brought to you by Benji's Princess Monterey Whale Watching Trips. Open daily on Old Fisherman's Wharf, Monterey.
There's more than one side to every issue. Actually, there's usually more than two sides. It's important to get a different perspective on issues and current events, and that's what we'll try to provide you on Thursday nights at 10 on KRXA 540. Our show is called, appropriately enough, A Different Perspective. I'm Jack Quirk, and I'm your co-host, along with Mark Leonard. We try to look at current issues from a unique angle and invite our listeners to call in and bring their own different perspective on contemporary affairs. Join us each Thursday night at 10 for A Different Perspective, here on KRXA 540.
I told our people, get information without torture, and was assured by our Justice Department that we were not torturing.
And you need to know, they hate us because we love freedom.
Well, listen, we've never been stayed, of course, George.
And I think it's important in a time of war that to the extent possible, we leave politics out of the major decisions being made.
However, we will not go along with a partisan fishing expedition aimed at honorable public servants. And I proposed a reasonable way to avoid an impasse.
Said was the Czech intelligence service reported after 9/11 that Atta had been in Prague on April 9th of 2001, where he allegedly met with an Iraqi intelligence official. We have never been able to confirm that, nor have we been able to knock it down.
It's been pretty well confirmed that he did go to Prague and he did meet with a senior official of the Iraqi intelligence service in Czechoslovakia last April.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show right after the top of the hour news. Saul Landau, filmmaker and a university professor, will join us to talk about Cuba. Change of the guard there. No change in America's foreign policy, though, because it's just been so damn successful for the last 40 years, you know? Another great success, the so-called war on drugs, and there's an effort to roll back at least one front, the disparity between sentencing for powder cocaine and crack cocaine. Jesselyn McCurdy, legislative counsel at ACLU's Washington office, is with us. And Jessica, tomorrow, the 26th, there is a hearing in the Senate Judiciary Subcommittee on Crime and Drugs. Who is the chair of that?
Actually, it's in the House Judiciary Committee tomorrow.
Okay. All right.
There was a hearing in the Senate Judiciary Committee back on February 12th.
Oh, okay. I misread that. I'm sorry.
Yes. So, but the hearing tomorrow is in the House. We're very pleased that the House of Representatives is going to take this issue up, as the Senate did a few weeks ago. Again, 20 years of this injustice, it's really time for Congress to act. So we're pleased that there's going to be a hearing tomorrow. We're going to have Judge Reggie Walton testify for the Federal Judicial Conference.
Mm-hmm.
And the Federal Judicial Conference, obviously, interestingly enough, judges are very against mandatory minimum sentences because it usurps their ability to be able to decide cases on an individual basis. So Judge Reggie Walton will talk a little bit about the Federal Judicial Conference's position.
As he takes time out from sentencing reporters to jail.
It's Judge Walton. That judge. Oh,
yep.
Gosh.
Yep.
That's not good.
Well, we'll take what we can get. I mean,
That's right.
Given my disappointments with Judge Walton over a number of issues, for him to be out front on this is, you know, just another thing that I can say good for you, because I don't agree with him on many other points.
That's true.
Now, Jessica, go ahead. Jesselyn, I'm sorry. Name names. Who can our listeners lobby on the House Judiciary Subcommittee on Crime and Drugs. Who's the chair and who are a couple of the wobbly members?
The chair is Representative Bobby Scott from Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
And Representative Bobby Scott has a bill out that is a very good bill that would actually eliminate the mandatory minimum sentence for crack and powder cocaine on the federal level. So it really goes in the right direction of where we need to be on this issue. So,
all right, but give us some of those Democrats who are in the majority but who are afraid to be seen as not tough enough on crime.
I think we definitely, I think it's both Democrats and Republicans. While on the Senate side, we have a number of Republicans that are supportive and sponsoring bills, we don't have many on the Senate, on the House side. So I think Representative Amar Smith, Representative Louie Gohmert from Texas, who is the new ranking member on that crime and terrorism Homeland Security Committee in the House, subcommittee in the House.
Mm-hmm.
I think we that people should hear from him. If they're listeners from California and are in Representative Dan Lundgren's district.
Oh, yeah, we cover Dan Lundgren's district.
I think people should hear from that his constituents should call in and tell him what they think about this issue. Also, Representative Daryl Issa. I'm not sure if you have listeners in that district.
He's Southern California, yeah.
We also have people coming from Southern California.
Mm-hmm.
All of these members are on the House Judiciary Committee. Some are in the Crime Subcommittee, some are not.
Okay.
But I think they need to hear from everyone in their district and let them know that people in their district understand what an injustice this law is.
Mm-hmm. All right. And, Jesslyn, you mentioned that this has been on the books for almost 20 years now. Do we have a ballpark figure of how many people have been sentenced under this barbaric law?
Well, let me tell you what we know is from the discussions around retroactivity. What we know is ultimately 19,500, maybe around anywhere from that number to 20,000 people will be eligible to have their sentence eligible for a possible reduction in their sentence based on the decision around retroactivity.
Okay.
Now, there are many more people who have already been released from prison that have been convicted of these crimes, again, because this is a 20-year-old law. But right now we know that there's around 20,000 people now that are affected by this law and that are in prison.
Now, Jesslyn, I'm really encouraged by this, but I would like to see a much larger move, which is to dismantle the war on drugs altogether. It has been a colossal failure. It has cost us billions of dollars in terms of incarceration, and it's done diddly to reduce demand for these illegal drugs in the United States. And frankly, I'm much more concerned right now about the impact of methamphetamine on young Americans than I am about cocaine. And I'd like to see us learn from these mistakes on crack versus powder and come up with rational approaches to dealing with meth. It's not an easy problem, and I understand the difficulties it presents to families and to communities. But we know that simply ratcheting up the laws and putting people in prison for longer terms doesn't do a damn thing to change the problems.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right, and I think and I think ultimately what we all would like to see is again into the war on drugs. I think so many people, so many organizations, so many people around the country recognize it has been a failure on every single level. I mean, it has been a failure. This, I think, is a first step. I think because we're talking about a government program that is a failure, you know, as well as anyone, i.e., the Iraq War, it is difficult for the government to admit that they are wrong and that it's a failure. And this is just another example. The war on drugs is just another example of how difficult it is to do that. And so what we're trying to do is kind of chip away at this concept around the war on drugs, because we know it has done nothing. We know it hasn't stopped the flow of drugs in this country. And we know it hasn't helped people who are addicted to drugs, because really, again, what we need to really focus on, particularly with people who are addicted to drugs, is getting them treatment. And now, unfortunately, what oftentimes happens, particularly with this disparity between crack and powder cocaine, is if you're addicted to or using powder cocaine recreationally, you get treatment. But if you are using crack cocaine and are addicted to crack cocaine, you get a prison cell.
Yep.
And that is wrong in this country. That should not be the approach that we take.
Well, and because you can often get drugs, including crack, in prison, many of these people essentially are sentenced to pick up a Ph.D. in drug crime.
That's right. And in crime in general. That's
yeah.
true. That's
well, Jesselyn, thank you for your work. I've really enjoyed talking with you. And will you keep me updated on this?
I absolutely will. Thank you so much for having
me on,
Peter.
Jesselyn McCurdy, Legislative Counsel for the ACLU, American Civil Liberties Union. Coming up next, a change of the guard in Havana. Saul Landau will join us on the Peter B. Collins Show, produced in San Francisco by Katrina Rill. Grab a podcast. The link's on the homepage at peterbcollins.com. We're talking with Veronique Raskin, founder of the Organic Wine Company. Veronique, you started the company more than 30 years ago, and was it partly because you were getting headaches from wine?
Absolutely. I'm an extremely chemically sensitive person. There were no wines, no conventionally grown wines that I could really drink and enjoy until I accidentally tasted my grandfather's wine and discovered to my extreme surprise that I could drink those wines without getting headaches. More and more people suffer the results of the accumulation of toxic substances in our environment, and our tolerance is getting really strained, and therefore it takes a very little amount of a toxic substance for them to start have an unpleasant experience.
Learn more about the Organic Wine Company on the web at ecowine.com. That's ecowine.com. To place an order or ask a question, call 888-ECO-WINE. Toll free, that's 1-888-ECO-WINE. Tell them Peter B. sent you.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
New projections on troop strength in Iraq.
It is in by the end of July, bigger than when we started the surge, that's for sure.
Voters' views of the surge could make or break John McCain.
How they judge Iraq will have a direct relation their judgment of me.
This is the CBS World News Roundup Late Edition. I'm Bill Whitney. The U.S. troop surge in Iraq, which started early last year, will be over this summer, but only in a manner of speaking. General Carter Hamm is Director of Operations at the Pentagon.
We're now projecting approximately 140,000 troops there in July. This accounts for the previously announced troop rotations and the drawdown of the five surge brigades and the Marine battalions without replacement.
That's 8,000 more than before the surge. CBS News correspondent David Martin explains.
Although all five combat brigades are coming home, what the Army calls trigger pullers, all the support troops are staying behind, and they're staying behind to continue supporting the Iraqi forces. So the surge will end as advertised in July, but the number of troops who will come home will be much less than the number of troops who went in as part of the surge.
General Hamm says it's too soon to say whether the number of troops can be brought down to pre-surge levels anytime this year. Now this.
Welcome to Chapman's Cheeses.
Yes, what do you recommend today?
Well, there's a special on forgotten expenses and disorganized sales figures. But I highly recommend the lingering invoicing. Very well aged.
Is running your business getting in the way of running your business? That's why millions of businesses rely on QuickBooks software to easily deal with routine chores, like tracking sales, organizing expenses, and creating invoices, so you can get back to what you do best.
This is a cheese shop, isn't it?
Yeah.
QuickBooks. Get back to business. Start today at QuickBooks.com.
Looking to diversify your portfolio? It's time to start trading foreign currencies at Forex.com. In these financial times, diversification is key. At Forex.com, we give you the tools you need to expand your investment portfolio beyond stocks and into the OTC foreign exchange market. Start trading foreign currencies 24 hours a day, 5 days a week. Go to Forex.com, open a free practice account today, and test your trading strategies risk-free. When you're ready, just click and trade. Forex.com.
Forex is an over-the-counter market and involves significant risk of loss.
The war in Iraq dominated the presidential campaign today. Barack Obama at the University of Cincinnati blasted John McCain.
He has said that we will stay as long as it takes in Iraq, even if it takes 100 years. And let me tell you, we don't need more failed policies of the past. We need a politics in the future.
McCain, talking to reporters on his campaign plane, said if Americans don't believe the Iraq strategy is working, then, quote, I lose. He quickly retracted that, but said,
I don't think there's any doubt that how they judge Iraq will have a direct relation to their judgment of me.
Hillary Clinton made a foreign policy speech at the George Washington University in Washington.
On my first day in office, I will announce
that the era of cowboy diplomacy is over.
And she said getting out of Iraq would be a priority.
We need a new national security strategy that employs military power wisely instead of squandering it. And that requires us to begin to bring our troops home from Iraq within 60 days of the new president taking office.
In a CBS News New York Times poll looking ahead to the general election, voters were asked about the leadership qualities of the three major candidates.
73% of registered voters overall think that John McCain is prepared to be president. A majority, 57%, think Hillary Clinton is also prepared to be president. But 56% think that Barack Obama needs more time before he's ready for the presidency.
On the other hand, says Sarah Dutton of our survey unit, two-thirds said Obama would unite the country versus 34% for Clinton, 51% for McCain. A new USA Today Gallup poll finds Obama has a double-digit lead nationally over Clinton, and 73% of those surveyed predict he'll be the Democratic nominee. Religion in America is going through a sweeping transition. CBS News correspondent Wyatt Andrews reports on a survey by the Pew Forum on Religion and Public Life.
The big statistic here is that 44% of all American adults have left the faith in which they were raised. In other words, change is the norm in the United States. Americans are fully appreciating and using freedom of religion. And where some people might see this as a weakness, where you literally go out, Americans go out and shop for what faith they want, other people see it as a strength because it reflects an America where people are in that pew because they've chosen this religion.
You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
In the end, all any of us have is our good name. So at Mercedes-Benz, we don't put our name on just anything. Every certified pre-owned Mercedes-Benz comes with a 155-point inspection, roadside assistance, a one-year warranty up to 100,000 miles, and the one thing no other pre-owned vehicle can offer: our good name. Mercedes-Benz. Stop by your local authorized dealer and ask about our certified pre-owned program.
See dealer for complete details on warranty and roadside assistance. Abbreviated inspection applicable to vehicles less than 15 months old with less than 18,000 miles.
Jackson, go tell Brinkman to speed things up on the job site.
That's a long way, boss, but I'm on my way. Message delivered, sir.
One more thing. Run back and tell him to...
We really need Nextel Direct Connect. I think I pulled a hammy.
Connect at the touch of a button with Nextel Direct Connect from Sprint. Get the rugged new i570 by Motorola. Just $69.99 for your business accounts. Visit Sprint.com/Nextel or call 1-800-SPRINT-1. Sprint, ends 4-1908. Excludes taxes. Subject to two-year agreement. Up to $36 activation, $200 early termination fees. Credit approval and deposit. Available corporate liable activations and eligible upgrades only. Restrictions apply. See store for details.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. Infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Peter B.'s America would not continue a failed policy against Cuba. And that's why I'm not in charge, friends. I have been labeled one of the most notorious lefties on the airwaves. That's fresh. I'm not sure what I did to earn that. But I'll take it. Coming up later this hour, we'll explore California's red ink budget woes.
Ready, steady, go.
Latest estimate from the alleged analyst, $16 billion is the shortfall this year. Hold on to your wallet. And next hour, we'll open up the phones in the free speech zone. Talk about Hillary's new feistiness in Ohio. Ralph Nader's entry into the race. And a few other things, too. You can always call the program toll-free, 888-5-PETER-B.
Ready, go!
Saul Landau joins us this half hour to talk about Cuba. He's now teaching at American University, used to be at Cal State Poly in Pomona, where he was director of digital media programs and the chair of applied interdisciplinary knowledge. He is, he's made many films over the years. He won a 1980 Emmy. He's been on Pacifica Radio for many years. And most notably, in his university days back at Madison, he was a student leader associated with the Pro-Cuban Fair Play for Cuba Committee. Professor, welcome back to our program.
Well, thank you, Peter.
Nice to talk with you again.
Nice to be back.
And, I'm pleased to see that you, like me, have been opposed to America's policies toward Cuba for a long, long time. And even with the handoff of the baton from Fidel to his 5-year younger brother, Raul, the U.S. posture doesn't appear to be changing in any meaningful way. And it doesn't appear that Cuba's posture toward the United States will change very much. Do you hold any hope that we can really see a thawing of this this incredibly ineffective policy that the U.S. has embraced for so long and so deeply?
Well, I think President Obama might have a hand in it. But I think under George Bush, you know, for 50 years, for almost 50 years now, the same policy has been applied and has failed. And that policy has been to attack Cuba through violence, to attack it economically through an embargo, to impose a travel ban on U.S. citizens going down there, to try to isolate Cuba diplomatically. Cubans charged that there were 638 assassination attempts on Castro, most of them either originating from or backed by the CIA.
And when did we stop attempting to assassinate Castro?
Well, I'll let you know. in other words, if you were a doctor and you had a patient, okay, and the patient had the same chronic illness for 50 years,
yeah,
and you continued to apply the same remedy, and the chronic illness not only didn't go away, but it got stronger.
Well, and it's like we're using old techniques like leeches or, you know, just bleeding someone.
Well, the point is the doctor's putting the leech on himself.
Yes, that's true.
It's a stupid policy because it backfires. It hurts us. Cuba today is getting investment from Brazil. It's getting it from France. It's getting it from China, from Venezuela. Even Israel has invested in Cuba and Spain. The mm-hmm. only country that's sort of left out is the United States. And you got American businessmen chomping at the bit.
Yeah.
They want in.
Well, Saul Landau, the other thing that I see is that based on this incredible failed policy, we apply it, in essence, without much of a change to Venezuela, and we've been more or less trying to apply it to Iran the last 7 years.
Yes, we're not quick learners. I mean, that's one thing I guess you could say. This country doesn't seem to learn. If you're number one, I mean, the neocon philosophy is, you really don't have to have any plans or policy. If you're number one, you're so strong, you can just tell everybody else what to do. And if they don't do it, well, you'll kick their butt. You know something? This hasn't worked. They tried this in Vietnam. What the hell, these little Vietnamese? They can't do anything. We'll kick their butt. Well, it was 10 years of that. That didn't work. But I guess people forgot. They went into Afghanistan. That doesn't seem to be working.
Mm-hmm.
Iraq doesn't seem to be working. We're spending, I don't know how many billion dollars a week over there for nothing.
Yeah.
And, you know, we don't seem to learn the basic lesson. First of all, you know, some general once said to me, he says, well, I guess the lesson from Vietnam is we shouldn't fight anybody who can fight back. And I thought, that makes sense. And so why are we spending $700 billion on defense that doesn't defend us, one, on weapons that are useless in terms of the kinds of enemies we're fighting?
Mm-hmm.
Why are we setting up expensive bases all around the world while the country is going deeper and deeper into deficit and deeper into recession? Well, the CEO of the country has his resume out now, and if anybody wants to go bankrupt quick, hire George Bush.
Mm-hmm. Saul Landau, one of the things that we have to stress here is that the ignominy of American foreign policy is bipartisan, and that Kennedy was there, getting Johnny Rosselli and these other mobsters, Sam Giancana, sharing girlfriends with these guys while trying to, drum up a plot to poison Castro. That was back in the early 60s. But the Democrats have not been much better, and Bill Clinton, even with the case of the young boy Elias... Elian Gonzalez?
Yeah.
Is that right? Yeah. Showed that domestic politics And the influence of the Cuban-American community, mostly in Miami, is what dominates this discussion. And we can't have any rational approach to Cuban policy as long as both political parties are taking money and trading influence with the Cuban exile community in Miami.
Well, I think, Peter, you've put your nail your hammer on one of the nails. But I wouldn't call it the Cuban community. I would say it's now a minority in the Cuban community. Most Cubans, I think, in Miami now have come after 1980, and they're basically immigrants, like most immigrants. They came here to make it. They didn't come here bearing a deep grudge against Fidel Castro.
Mm-hmm.
And they want to go back and see their family. And George Bush doesn't let them do that. They can only go back once every 3 years, and they are limited in what they can send back in terms of remittances. So they're a little bit bitter about this. And they don't support these draconian measures. So that's one thing that's happened. The old Cuban mafia, as I like to refer to them,
mm-hmm.
that have had this enormous influence because they've been paying off the right members of Congress, strategically, by the way, they share, I think, power with a very vindictive group in the national security elite in Washington,
mm-hmm.
who say that, you know, Fidel Castro does belong in the Guinness Book of Records for disobedience. I just think anybody else in 50 years has behaved so contemptuously toward the United States and gotten away with it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they took care of Arbenz in Guatemala in 54. They knocked off the Shah in 53. They did Chetty Jagan in Guyana in 58. They knocked off the president of Brazil in 64. The Marines went into the Dominican Republic. On and on. They knocked off Allende. They ran a war against the Sandinistas and so on. Only one man has emerged as the symbol of resistance. And you look at it today. 50 years ago, the United States ran Latin America. Nobody dared to say no.
Mm-hmm.
That was 1958. Now, in 2008, 50 years later, Fidel Castro's got four sons running countries in Latin America. Now, they're not biological, they're ideological sons. They're running the governments of Nicaragua, Venezuela, Bolivia, and Ecuador. And he's got a bunch of cousins running countries in Brazil, in Chile, in Argentina, in Guatemala, soon in Paraguay, and probably in Peru as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, what a change. So the man who they were trying to eliminate, assassinate, invade, knock off in every which way, shape, and form, has triumphed. And Cubans, albeit their conditions are far from wonderful, they made their mark on the world.
Mm-hmm.
They changed the destiny of Southern Africa. Cuban troops, and most Americans don't know this, Peter, they kicked the South African apartheid army's butt in battles at Cuito Cuanavale in 1987 and 88. In southern Angola.
Mm-hmm.
And the casualties were so high that the South African forces had to redo their strategy. And part of that meant they had to let go of this perimeter defense that they had and let Nelson Mandela out of jail and recognize the ANC. And if anybody was watching television during Mandela's inauguration, he pushed Fidel's welcoming hand aside and grabbed him in a bear hug and said audibly, "You made this possible."
Yeah.
So Cubans have made their mark. They've changed Latin America. They've changed the destiny of Southern Africa. Most people don't know they fielded 1,500 troops in the 1973 Yom Kippur War. Cuban doctors were battlefield surgeons in the war in Vietnam. If you look around the world, Cuban musicians and artists and writers and scientists and doctors and so on have etched their names into the honor rolls of many countries through their work.
We're going to take a break and return with Saul Landau. He's now teaching at American University. And if you have a question or comment about the change of the guard in Cuba, give us a call now, toll free at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. Anyhow, we take calls from Miami. More straight ahead on the Peter B. Collins Show. KRXA 540. Progressive talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. The Grove Market in Pacific Grove is ideal for all of your grovery shopping.
Locally owned and operated for 37 years by the Higuera family, the Grove Market boasts the finest selections of just-picked conventional and organic produce our Central Coast farms have to offer. The Grove Market's full-service meat department specializes in the highest quality, choice, fresh-cut, and prepared meats. Local artisanal bakeries deliver breads and other delectable baked goods hot from the oven every morning. To perfect your gourmet home-cooked meal, choose from the Grove Market's outstanding selection of Monterey wines. The Grove Market features competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey. You can't go wrong at the Grove Market. So shop Monday through Saturday from 8 to 7 and 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove, 242 Forest Avenue, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop.
From Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore in Carmel, and we have something new, a unique opportunity to give yourself or someone special the gift of consultation with nationally respected life coach and career mentor Raymond Davi. Paul and I know firsthand the empowerment Ray has to offer. Discover how changes can propel you where you want to go in the areas of personal and career growth or planning goals for ongoing success, as well as insights for your work-life balance. Don't hesitate. Call and reserve your 90-minute appointment or purchase a gift certificate now. Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore and Secret Garden, 624-4955 or www.pilgrimsway.com.
Beyond Wheat Artisan Bakery, right here in Monterey, brings you sugar-free and gluten-free muffins and cakes that are all natural, with organic ingredients and loaded with super grain nutrition. Find Beyond Wheat at Whole Foods Market in Monterey and Cornucopia Community Market in Carmel. Be sure to try Beyond Wheat for a truly special treat, created to keep you happy and totally guilt-free. You'll be so glad you did.
Slow down. You know you move too fast. This is Barbara Mossberg inviting you to join me for our Poetry Slowdown at High Noon Sundays. My guests February 17th are Ruth Paget and the winner of the Youth Cowboy Poetry Festival and actress-playwright Jill Jackson. We'll rebroadcast our first two launch shows February 24th and March 2nd and continue March 9th with guest Jeannie Adams on the Poetry of Trees. I can't wait to hear from you then.
Good afternoon, checking traffic on KRXA, and not looking too bad as we start things off on a Monday. Just one injury crash out there, Live Oak, Brommer Street at Thompson Avenue. Car and a bicyclist mixed it up, all the activity off to the side. Looks like paramedics are on the scene. For Carmel, southbound Highway 1 at Carpenter Street, we had reports of a car fire. That's off to the side. Fire department is on the scene hosing that down, but look for some heavy traffic as you approach the area. Highway 17 going through the Santa Cruz Mountains, currently checking and installing accident-free. Highway 68 looks good right now, no problems to tell you about. And 101 through Salinas, problem-free as well. There is road work in Van Lomond. It's northbound Highway 9 from Middle Road out to Western Avenue. Left lane shut down for what they're calling roadway rehabilitation. That goes on until the end of this month, and that may cause delays. This is brought to you by the California Public Utilities Commission. Call CalPhone Info at 1-800-818-5009 for free information to help you get smarter about telephone services provided by the California Public Utilities Commission. I'm Nate Nix, and that's traffic on KRXA.
Continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. Go ahead, have a cigar. Light it up in honor of Fidel Castro. He handed off power to his brother Raul, a youngster at age 76, and Raul was fully installed in Havana on Sunday. We're getting comment from Saul Landau, professor at American University and an award-winning filmmaker. And according to Wikipedia, your most recent film was about Syria, between Iraq and a hard place. Is that still true?
Well, no. I made one since then called We Don't Play Golf Here, and it's about globalization in Mexico. In fact, we finished it last year. Okay. So Wikipedia is a little bit behind the times.
Okay. Well, you got to get your publicity team to alert us on these things. So I'd love to talk to you about We Don't Play Golf Here. So maybe they could send me a DVD, and then we could have a conversation.
I'll be glad to, Peter.
Okay, sounds good. Got a bunch of callers for you. I just wanted to reference one item here to underscore the extent to which both Democratic and Republican administrations have been beholden to Cuban-American interests who have blocked any modification of our policy toward Cuba. I cannot forget that during the impeachment trial of Bill Clinton, they offered testimony from Monica Lewinsky that she was under the desk servicing the president when he took a call from one of the Fanuel brothers. These are sugar barons and staunch supporters of the hardline Cuban position there in Miami. And she was able to corroborate that she was in the Oval Office performing these tasks on the president at the time the call came in. And they never asked about, you know, exactly what kind of influence does this man have over the president of the United States that he would interrupt that moment to take a political call.
Well, I think it speaks for itself. When money is more important than sex, especially to Bill Clinton, you know that man is important.
Amen. John in Carmel Valley, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show with Saul Landau.
The reading I've done in the last year or so is, to me, discouraging about John Kennedy. I used to be a big admirer, and now I have very mixed feelings compared to what I used to have. And it's largely due over his, I think, almost fanatical anti-communist stand, especially as it related to Castro. There isn't just the Bay of Pigs and the Cuban Missile Crisis. There's the event that's well chronicled in Seymour Hersh's book, The Dark Side of Camelot. It's the attempt by both John Kennedy and his attorney general, his brother, Robert, to kill, assassinate Castro in a plot they called Operation Mongoose. It was hugely unsuccessful, and both those two Kennedys were very frustrated because they couldn't get either the CIA or the FBI to pull it off for them.
Right.
At least that's the version Hersh has. Any comments?
Go ahead, Saul.
Certainly, Mongoose was an operation designed to wreak terror on Cuba, and it wasn't just assassination. It was sabotage and bombings and arson and so on. I would call Kennedy a simo-opter. I don't think you'll find the word in the dictionary. But that means a president, I guess it's ultimate cowardice, who will take two opposing solutions to the same issue. On a day that Kennedy was assassinated in Dallas in 1963, one of his emissaries was in Havana talking to Castro about a list of issues that they would go over. Another emissary of Kennedy was receiving a sniper rifle from a CIA handler. Yeah. Now, whichever one worked, negotiate or assassinate. Kennedy supported the Alliance for Progress to bring democracy to Latin America. He also supported counterinsurgency, the enemy of democracy in Latin America. Kennedy was for pulling out of Vietnam. Kennedy was for getting deeper into Vietnam. As you said, Kennedy worked with the mob to kill Castro and at the same time took pleasure from their girlfriends. At the same time, Brother Bobby was prosecuting the mob.
Would you say that was a key precedent for this similar action that Nixon's and Kissinger's group took against Salvador Allende back in the early 70s?
No, I think that the Nixon policy was quite clear. They wanted to get rid of Allende, and they didn't have any other policy. They weren't for appeasing Allende or negotiating with him. They were for getting rid of him.
Yeah, but I don't see how you can say there's no precedent.
Oh, there's a precedent that, you know, the precedent goes further back than that. The United States have been getting rid of governments for a long time. Illegally.
You mean like Mossadegh back in the Eisenhower
administration? Mossadegh in 1953,
yep.
President Arbenz in Guatemala in 1954, President Chetty Jagan of Guyana in 1958, President Juan Goulart in 1964, Juan Bosch for the Dominican Republic in 1965.
Don't forget Diem.
Yes,
so
you can collect all 52 cards. John, I got to run, take another call. Thank you for your point. Dave and Eureka, you're next on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hey, Peter and Professor. Despite being lied to for 50 years about the hated dictator of Cuba, I have come to admire and respect this man very much. with all of our millionaires and billionaires here, we have a lot of poverty. Everybody in Cuba has their own home. Everybody in Cuba has food. Everybody in Cuba has medical care. That little country provides the physicians to most of the other poor countries of the world. He walks about with his people wearing a private uniform. There are no limousines. As far as I can tell, there's no security guards. So I've grown to respect this man. He's doing something that isn't done here. We say, to hell with the poor. All we want them for is to exploit them.
All right. Saul Landau, do you share Dave's view?
Well, I think yes, and also Cubans are quite poor, and they struggle a lot. And, you know, above it, what you said is true, but Cubans are not happy. That's why hundreds of them are leaving all of the time to try to come to Florida.
Professor, I'm out of time. It's been a pleasure talking with you, and we'll do it again.
Thank you, Peter.
Saul Landau here on the Peter B. Collins Show. We're going to talk about the California budget problem next with Assembly Budget Chair John Laird.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Was she over the top? This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network. You notice the film industry has been trying to do its best to depress us lately?
No Country for Old Men.
Yeah, that movie just made me want to curl up in a basement and self-medicate. But what's really been sweeping the nation lately is, of course, something completely different. It's the Barack Obama hope machine, those huge rallies packed with young people, swept up in the enthusiasm. And with a week to go before those primaries in Ohio and Texas, it's clearly driving Hillary Clinton nuts. So she's got ads in Ohio showing her fighting for middle-class jobs.
She's fighting for America's middle class.
It's time to level the playing field against the special interests.
She's got ads in Texas, where she's rolling up her sleeves.
In Texas, when there's work to be done, talk doesn't cut it. You gotta roll up your sleeves, stand your ground.
And yet, everywhere she goes, all she hears is hope, 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 hope. Until finally, at a town meeting in Rhode Island on Saturday, she made it clear she'd had enough of Barack's happily ever after speeches.
The sky will open. The light will come down. Celestial choirs will be singing. And everyone will know we should do the right thing and the world will be perfect.
I believe she was mocking him. Critics, of course, called it over the top, but I don't know. I don't think it was over the top. This would be over the top.
Come, my little friends, as we all sing a happy little working song.
She didn't go that far.
Oh!
Now this.
So, hon, how do you want your hair done?
Oh, I just want to try something really different.
Okay, well, if we trim your disorganized finances, layer your expenses, and give your late invoicing some body, you'll look just like a movie star.
Is running your business getting in the way of running your business? That's why millions of businesses rely on QuickBooks software to easily handle routine chores, like organizing finances and tracking expenses, so you can get back to what you do best.
You are a stylist, aren't you?
Award-winning.
QuickBooks. Get back to business. Start today at QuickBooks.com.
This is Dave Ross on the web at DaveRoss.com.
Hi, I'm Ginger.
And I'm Jay. And we would like to personally invite you to experience why Monterey County food critics are raving about our family restaurant, A Pizza Paradise.
Could it be our fantastic one-of-a-kind specialty pizzas or huge calzones, such as the Jamaican Me Crazy, the White Sands Beach, the Veggin' Out, or the Wild Mushroom Dream?
Or could it be because we also offer delicious salads, sandwiches, rice plates, and irresistible homemade desserts by Ginger?
Recently recognized as Local's Favorite, Best for Families, Most Creative, Big Screen and Big Eat, and we'll return to spend our own money.
So come relax in our tropical surf-themed restaurant and top off your meal with an ice-cold draft beer from Kona Brewing Company, fresh-brewed Hawaiian coffee, or Lappert's Hawaiian ice cream.
That's A Pizza Paradise, located in the Marina Village Center at 215 Reservation Road in Marina. Or call 582-9149 or see us on the web at apizzaparadise.net.
That's A Pizza Paradise.
582-9149.
At Homescapes Carmel, it's important to us that we appeal to both the senses and the sensibilities of our customers. I'm Thompson Lang, and my brother Beau and I invite you to explore, touch, and discover all the unique items we have at Homescapes in downtown Carmel. For importers like us, nothing beats finding eclectic and worldly things in their native lands and then bringing them home to Carmel by the sea. Homescapes Carmel is on the corner of 7th and Dolores, and as soon as you walk through the doors, you'll share in the thrill of discovery. We have a wide range of furnishings and accessories that exemplify wabi-sabi, celebrating the the beauty, functionality, and morality of living green. At Homescapes Carmel, we're dedicated to our customers, to our employees, and to our community. We look forward to working with you to make your home the perfect blend of comfort, beauty, and individuality. Please stop by Homescapes Carmel on 7th and Dolores. We are open 7 days a week from 10 to 6. You can call us at 831-624-6499 or check us out at homescapescarmel.com.
Live from San Francisco, the Peter B. Collins Show, the antidote to right-wing talk radio. He's thoughtful, well-informed, and brings you views and voices you don't hear in the corporate media. Here's another slice of Peter B.'s America.
Well, we're fixing to fix some things here today. We just fixed the problems in U.S. foreign policy toward Cuba. Last hour, we fixed the disparity in sentencing between crack and powder cocaine. And in just 12 minutes, we're hoping to fix California's budget problems. Returning to our program, the assembly member who represents Santa Cruz and the Monterey Peninsula, and he also serves as the chair of the Assembly Budget Committee, John Laird. Hello, John.
Hey, Peter.
How you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
You can't be telling the truth. You're confronting a huge budget shortfall, and you got a governor who says no new taxes.
Yeah, but now that I know you're going to fix it in the next 12 minutes, things have gotten a lot better.
Well, you know, I had Willie Brown on the show last week, and he was reflecting about how he promised to fix San Francisco's Muni, the bus system, in 100 days. And, well, it has still eluded him, and he's been out of office for several years now.
Everybody's buzzing about his book here in the Capitol.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What are they saying?
They're all reading it, and he even inscribed one, something... I can't even remember it. I'm not going to do it justice on how seriously to take some of it. But everybody's really interested in it.
Well, he never disappoints. He loves to dish, and the book is interesting. It appears to have been dictated by him, with one exception. His ghostwriter, PJ somebody, had to put all the G's back on of all those words.
Well, I was, as a 22-year-old college senior, I was one of the George McGovern delegates that he gave the speech about "Give me back my delegation."
Oh yeah.
And, he came down into the delegation to talk to a few of us because we were not going to vote for Thomas Eagleton for vice president. I wanted to vote for Jerry Waldie, and he told me I had to vote for Eagleton. So last year at a banquet in San Francisco, I followed him and I said, "There's the guy that made me vote for the only person to be kicked off a national political ticket for electroshock treatment. That guy made me do it. I didn't want to do it. He made me do it."
Well, John, before we get into the budget mess, I just wanted to tell you, I had one little pang of regret. On Super Tuesday, the 5th of February, when I went into the polling place, and I voted against Proposition 93.
Ooh.
And I had gotten a call just a couple of days before from one of your constituents saying, "You know, I hear what you're saying about Prop 93, but what about John Laird?" And, you know, I really had that moment of regret because I felt that the reason 93 went down and the reason I voted against it was that I could not imagine giving a new lease on life to Fabian Nunez and Don Parada. And I really feel they haven't delivered for the people of California. And that, you know, changing the term limits and giving them that extra time, I just wasn't up for it. And I just wanted to express that to you because if it had been different and if the focus had been hardworking legislators like you whose constituents would like to return you to office beyond term limits, I would have voted for it.
Well, thank you, Peter. I'm sorry it was personalized to them because I think... some of those negative ads didn't give them a fair shake, and it's a reform that we have to have at some point. It just isn't working, but the voters of Santa Cruz and Monterey counties were two of the few rare counties that voted for it, so I took heart in that. I took it to mean exactly what you just said. They'd have liked the chance to to keep me there, and I'll be grateful for that.
Yeah. All right, so you've got one more year here to serve as the budget chair, and it's going to be one of your most difficult. And here you have on one side, the latest from the ledge analyst is that the red number is $16 billion. And in recent weeks, you've trimmed $1 billion, some of the tough cuts on Medi-Cal and on home nursing care. I mean, many of the things that Democrats and progressives have fought so hard for. And it's only going to get worse. And my first question to you, John, is this governor going to maintain his no new taxes pledge, or will he allow creative ways to raise revenue against this yawning gap?
Well, that's the question of the hour, and we're working to understand the answer to that. And let me just for a moment put a little context on the question you asked, because what we did last week is we cut the number next year from $16 billion in half to just under $8 billion is the problem heading into next year. And we fixed this year's budget. We turned over a $3 billion hole into a $1 billion surplus, and we dealt with the cash flow problem so we won't have the gun to our head of a default that would force us to take the cuts-only budget. And the only thing that we did that I am not incredibly happy about in that mid-year thing were the medical cuts that you mentioned. And what we did is we carefully did not accept the governor's proposal to begin them right away in this year, but they would not begin until into the next fiscal year, so we get a chance to revisit them as part of our entire budget process the next 4 months. Mm-hmm. And so that sets the frame for what your question is, because if you do the $8 billion problem that we have, plus the medical care cuts, which are in the hundreds of millions but below $1 billion, that is what we have to face for next year. And since that includes K-12 education, higher fees for education, prisoner releases, cuts in human services, cuts in aid to people on Social Security, closing of parks, and an early prison release, it's a question of, can we mitigate some of those cuts with some additional revenue? And are there additional revenue sources that are simple majority votes and not two-thirds that might be something the governor would sign?
Mm-hmm.
And so all those questions get right to the million-dollar question, which you just asked. And he has painted himself partially into a corner here, this no new taxes business. And he sort of didn't say no new fees. And he didn't say if the voters do it. And there were certain things that didn't get said, but he's taken too strong a position. I mean, George Skelton took him on in the Los Angeles Times in the last couple of days, saying he said everything is on the table except for some things that I don't want to be on the table. You can't have it both ways, is what he said, you know.
Yeah. Now, you referenced a number of the areas that are proposed to try to save money, and let me just ask you about one. I care a lot about the prison system. It's a huge mess. And while I'm not opposed to early release for some of the group of offenders that have been described, about 22,000 nonviolent short-termers, I also believe that there are tremendous savings and an important act of justice in addressing the languishing lifers. There are almost 25,000, mostly males, who were sentenced before 1980, many of whom are now over 60, even 70 years of age. They are the lowest risk of reoffending, and they're the highest cost in the population that we have in jails. Why cannot we rationally approach the situation of lifers?
I don't think there's been a discussion with the people of California in that clear a way about that. And it's, you know, because one of the reasons they're the highest cost prisoners is because of their health needs and prison
mm-hmm.
health care.
Yeah.
And if you look at the federal courts having taken over our prison health care system, something like $1.1 billion of our budget problem right now is attributable to that. And I think the difficulty is the way some of those prisoners are represented to the public is here's somebody that committed a violent crime,
mm-hmm.
even if they can't walk now.
Yeah.
And so how do you have that discussion in a way that people look at it differently? Because I think you are exactly right in sort of who is a threat. If they've been in prison for 30 years for a violent robbery and or something, and they can't walk now,
mm-hmm.
and we're paying nothing but these extra gazillions for health care, where's the issue there? Where is the warehousing? And I don't think anybody's raising the issue clearly with the people of California to change, except for you right now.
All right.
Which, as usual, I might add.
Well, I better work on that.
Yeah, because I think people need to understand that's at the heart of it. It's not somebody that's 22 right off the streets and an imminent threat in
mm-hmm.
the same way.
Yeah. John Laird is with us. He chairs California Assembly Budget Committee. And Laura joins us from Sacramento. Welcome, Laura. You're on the air.
Thank you. First, I'd like to echo your sentiments, Peter, about why we had to collectively vote no on Prop 93. And unfortunately, we all end up losing when we're denied our First Amendment rights to have the representative of our choice.
Yeah.
But with regards to the budget crisis, the structural deficits can be ameliorated immediately by revisiting Prop 13 and doing a split roll. There is no reason that corporate property should have been given a free pass when we tried to save Grandma's house.
Laura,
and when I read
Laura,
stories, yes?
Laura, I want you to drop and give me 100 push-ups right now.
I'll give you 150. It makes me furious when I read stories recently about corporate neighbors like Chevron in Richmond that despite billions of dollars in profits,
yep.
they're going back to court repeatedly asking that their tax burden be relieved.
And, Laura, the example I use is that Macy's owns real estate up and down California, and the company has changed hands 4 or 5 times since Prop 13 was passed, but they sell the shell of the corporation, so there's no reassessment. And these are ways...
back to the problem of corporate personhood. There should be something between... recognizing them as a person and not recognizing them at all. And I think that decision back in 1911, if I'm not mistaken, did a terrible disservice, and it laid the groundwork for that kind of chicanery.
Laura, thanks for raising it, Mr. Chairman.
I agree with the caller now, because I agree totally on the issue. I believe there needs to be a split role. I don't believe that was the intent in Prop 13, and it could be anywhere from billions of dollars in the range of billions to dollars. Now, the problem is the process, because that has to go to the voters.
Yep. It was passed by a simple majority, and it requires a supermajority, 66, to pass.
I'm not sure. It would in the legislature, but I think you might be able to do a simple majority on a statewide ballot.
Really?
The problem is that while Laura said it's about the corporate personhood, I'm sorry, it's 50% plus one of the people of California that could reverse this.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is having to do this organizing to get a million signatures and to resist the onslaught of dollars that would come on against it. That's our challenge with this.
Gosh, you think
I agree. We need to do it. The speaker who's been, you know, negatively mentioned on this call has endorsed it in the recent past. I mean, I think we need to do it. It's a question of which things we can get on the ballot over mm-hmm. the long term.
Mike in Fair Oaks, you're next with Assemblyman John Laird. Go ahead.
Hi, Chairman Laird. How are you?
Fine, thanks.
My question is this hiring freeze the governor has imposed, freeze on contracts, you know, so on and so forth. This goes on all the time. It's gone on for years. And it kind of flies in the face of sanity when you really understand what's going on with these freezes. Specifically, you've got situations where state agencies are moving forward with huge capital acquisitions. They're hiring people as we speak. And I'm talking about Cal Fire and the Department of Corrections. And there's a huge disconnect between what state managers are held accountable for and what they're not held accountable for.
Well, anything that's arbitrary is not generally a good thing. When the governor proposed across-the-board cuts of 10%, that's ridiculous because it doesn't set one priority over another and just does an arbitrary number across whatever the needs are. If you do a hiring freeze, it's very similar. What if it just turns out through random circumstance the highest number of retirements in a moment are in one particular place that is consumer protection in the Attorney General's office? Why should we have a freeze on enforcement of consumer protection laws because a hiring freeze just hits who leaves in that particular place at that particular time? I mean, geez, it could be meat inspections given what's gone mm-hmm. on in the last few weeks with that. Why would yeah. we risk sort of the health of the public because there just happen to be vacancies in the people that do meat inspections and you have the arbitrariness of a hiring freeze? There is a law that I think needs to be repealed that positions automatically go away if they're not filled for 6 months. Well, if you know the state personnel process, positions get filled in 6 months on a good day. And so it almost arbitrarily dispatches positions that have to go through paperwork to be reinstated. And so anything that is arbitrary in an across-the-board budget cut and hiring freeze, those kinds of things, just gives you no priority and doesn't make sense in the scheme of actually getting a job done.
Well, Mike,
I'm sorry, but thank you for a great call. You're well informed. I'd love to talk more, but the Assemblyman has limited time, and I promise to talk about one other issue, which is LBAM, the light brown apple moth. The Monterey area has been subject to aerial spraying already, and I was one of those people sprayed with malathion for the medfly back in the mid-70s, John, and so I share the concerns that people have about this. You and your colleagues, Mark Leno, Jared Huffman, and Lonnie Hancock, introduced a passel of bills last week related to this, and yours would require the State Department of Food and Ag to prepare a list of invasive species, including which chemicals might be used in eradication. This suggests that we don't have a very good set of protocols to determine if and when this kind of spraying is necessary and appropriate, and the extent to which it might harm members of the public.
Exactly. And I think the problem is that if you look at the failures of the last 6 or 8 months, the failures have been in responding to the concerns or addressing the concerns of the public on the aerial spraying. And in addition, just almost along the lines of what you said, I'm going to do a resolution that basically takes some of the issues that we don't think have been satisfactorily addressed coming out of the spraying in Santa Cruz and Monterey counties last year and ask the Department of Agriculture to address them. I mean, one is that there have been many people that have indicated they have health complaints after the spraying, and there was no process for recording this, having them seen, having any information gathered to determine whether that's true. And so, you know, one piece of the resolution that speaks to what you said is that it's a responsibility of the government to demonstrate that its actions are necessary, appropriate, and do not compromise health or the environment. It's not the responsibility of citizens to demonstrate the reverse.
Mm-hmm. And what is the climate in Sacramento? Is this seen as a minor local issue that doesn't deserve state-level attention? Or since it's now coming into the Bay Area, I feel in the last year it was given short shrift in Monterey County, and that now that it's hitting the San Francisco Bay Area, your colleagues are paying more attention.
Yes. I mean, last year it was just Santa Cruz and Monterey counties. I was working actively on it. Senator Simidian was paying attention. Senator Maldonado was kind of hoping it would go away. And now that it's in the Bay Area, I mean, the four of us that introduced bills are the budget chair, the appropriations chair, the chair of the Environmental Safety Committee, and the chair of the Natural Resources Committee. I mean, we all are sort of leaders in the area. And I think while it is getting attention, it is still off the radar screen for a substantial amount of Californians, and I think there's a question about where is there safety to the markets and things that other people that aren't familiar with the issues here will have about this. And I think it's our obligation to say that, yes, we want to protect the crops, but when you go spraying urban residential neighborhoods without satisfactorily addressing the concerns of people or having a follow-up process to demonstrate that there weren't negative impacts, unless you're sort of prepared to do that, you're going to have the kind of uproar that we had in the Monterey Bay Area in the last year.
John, how should our listeners direct their interest on this subject? Should they contact you? Should they be contacting the other legislators you mentioned?
Yes, and I think that there's an agriculture committee, and they should pay attention to when hearings are set. If people want to contact my office, that is a good thing, and they can get that off the Internet or any other places to let them know of concerns or have opinions registered in the committee process, and we'd attempt to guide them. And this has been, in my sixth year in the legislature, this has been the highest number of contacts of my office of any single issue since I've been in the legislature.
Wow. Well, John, thank you for your time and expertise today. Always a pleasure to talk with you.
My pleasure, Peter.
That's John Laird. He's the Democrat Assembly member from Santa Cruz, termed out this year, but he'll take one more stab at California's budget as chair of the Budget Committee this summer. We'll take a break and return here on the Peter B. Collins Show. It's 54 minutes after the hour.
You're listening to KRXA 540.
Checking traffic on KRXA. We have one new problem for you. Crash in Salinas. Old Stage Road at Williams Road. Looks like a vehicle went off the roadway and collided with a tree. Possible injuries. You have CHP and paramedics on the way. The rest of our problems in Santa Cruz County. Freedom heads up Buena Vista Drive at Manfrey Road. Several cows are strolling around the roadway. Brommer Street at Thompson Avenue in Live Oak. An older injury crash. Car and a bicyclist off to the side. They're actually saying minor injuries now, but paramedics still out there, and that's in the final clearing stages as well. Highway 1 northbound. The Emmeline Avenue off-ramp in Santa Cruz shut down for road work. And up in Ben Lomond, northbound 9 between Middle Road and Western Avenue, we have the left lane shut down for road work. That goes on until the end of this month. That may cause delays. Highway 17, check and install and accident-free. And Highway 68, we have nothing to tell you about. This is brought to you by Visa. Every company succeeds in its own way, and Visa Business can help with smart, simple, and secure payment options. No matter what you want to do in business, business takes Visa. I'm Nate Nix, and that's traffic on KRXA.
Hey, it's Sheila Gale here to tell you about Monta Vista Wine and Spirits on Soledad Drive in Monterey. It's family-owned for over 40 years. They have all the best wines. It's the real deal. With a high-end liquor selection, it's all there. And if you have a special request, they'll take care of it for you. Monta Vista Wine and Spirits is open every day 9 to 9. Call ahead. Your order will be waiting for you. Monta Vista Wine and Spirits, 19 Soledad Drive by Del Monte Center in Monterey. Reminds you to please drink responsibly.
Doing business in Santa Cruz County since 1950, Wilson's Tire and Service has two locations to serve you better wherever you live. Both locations feature full-service, friendly, fast, same-day service, or in the words of hands-on owner Juan Escamilla,
we're fast and fair, and service is job one at Wilson's Tire and Service.
Juan specializes in tire, brake, and alignment services with state-of-the-art equipment. Looking for fast, friendly, same-day service from experienced pros? Come to Wilson's Tire and Service, now located in Soquel Village at Old San Jose Road in Soquel Drive in Aptos Village, across from the entrance to Nicene Mark State Park. Questions? Give Juan a call at 476-0370. That's 476-0370. Say hello to Juan and get the Wilson's Tire and Service full service.
Don't forget to ask Juan how KRXA listeners can save an additional 10% at Wilson's Tire and Service.
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, the host of the new show, curiously enough, called The Scott Dick Show, weekdays following The Peter B. Collins Show. Every evening from 6 to 8 p.m., we'll talk about local and regional issues, national and international politics, military and veterans affairs, and anything else that hasn't been lip-smacked to death already. So hang around after The Peter B. Collins Show and tune in to the gift you just can't return, The Scott Dick Show, weekdays 6 to 8 p.m., where I'll shoot from the lip and take no prisoners.
We continue now on the Peter B. Collins Show. Just a couple of minutes in front of the hour. Not enough time to take a phone call here, but next hour it's wide open for your phone calls at 888-5-PETER-B. In fact, if you want to grab a line now, you'll be ahead of the pack, and we'll go to your calls right after the top of the hour news. Want to talk to you about Ralph Nader's entry into the presidential campaign. Are you excited by that, or is it just another yawner? Also, Hillary Clinton was playing nice to Barack Obama at the Texas debate last week. Then, in Ohio, went on the attack over the weekend. And we will detail for you a connection between the Clinton campaign and the Drudge Report, where Drudge published an unflattering photo of Barack Obama today. Also, want to talk to you about whether Hillary should step aside. I think that it's very clear she's not going to win the nomination, and I agree with Ed Schultz, not Tom Hartman on this one. I think Ed's in the mainstream. Tom says this is a fringe view, but I actually take Big Eddie on this one. And it was interesting to see Ed Schultz opposite Air America's Mart Green on Hardball Friday night. Whoa, Ed didn't have any pads on, and he was hitting real hard. 888-5-PETER-B, if you'd like to talk with us, 888-573-8372. I was dubbed by an article in the San Francisco Chronicle of this weekend, one of the most notorious lefties on the airwaves. Whoa. We're talking with Veronique Raskin, founder of the Organic Wine Company, which offers more than 60 different wines made with certified organic grapes. Veronique, French wines are intimidating for some American consumers. Mm-hmm. How do you help break it down for us?
Don't be intimidated. What is there to be intimidated about? There's nothing too exotic about them. You either like them or you don't like them. You know, it's really simple. You either like Van Gogh or you don't. You either like the Beatles or you don't. You know, wines are really a form of a vibration in a bottle, just like poetry, just like music. And you know the style of music that you like. So maybe you're going to love French wines. And then go for it.
Learn more about the Organic Wine Company on the web at ecowine.com. That's ecowine.com. To place an order or ask a question, call 888-ECO-WINE toll free. That's 1-888-ECO-WINE. Tell them Peter B.C.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. Before the surge, there were 132,000 troops in Iraq. When the surge is officially over this summer, there will be 8,000 more. Lieutenant General Carter Hamm, the Pentagon's Director of Operations, says combat troops will be pulled out, but many support troops will remain.
The President made a decision to draw down the 5 surge brigades, the 2 Marine battalions, by July of this year. And so that's where we are. That's where our projection will take us out to that point.
Beyond that, he refuses to speculate on further troop reductions. CBS News correspondent David Martin says this plan puts continuing strain on one branch of the military in particular.
The Army, near the breaking point on sustaining the surge, because as you remember, they had to go to 15-month combat tours with only 12 months at home. Now the Army is going to have to sustain this number of 143,000 for a couple months past July. So the Army definitely has its work cut out for it.
John McCain, a supporter of the surge, told reporters today that how voters judge the situation in Iraq will have a direct relationship to their judgment of him. He said, clearly, I am tied to it to a large degree. Hillary Clinton attacked McCain in a foreign policy speech today.
Senator McCain can't seem to budge from the Bush approach that insists on using military force when diplomacy is needed. He has said he wants to keep our troops in Iraq. Would be fine with him for 50 to 100 years.
Barack Obama, during a rally at the University of Cincinnati, challenged the notion that Clinton would be stronger against McCain.
Some people are telling you not to believe because, well, they say, you know, those Republicans are going to be tough on Obama. And I have to remind people, I'll be just as tough back. I don't mind having debates with John McCain.
How do the voters feel? Looking ahead to the general election, a CBS News New York Times poll finds they give McCain high marks.
John McCain is viewed as the strongest candidate when it comes to handling an international crisis or being an effective commander-in-chief. 56% of registered voters overall are confident in McCain's ability to handle an international crisis, and 48% say it's very likely that he would be an effective commander-in-chief.
Sarah Dutton of our survey unit. A former police officer in Canton, Ohio, will face the death penalty or life without parole when he's sentenced for killing his pregnant girlfriend and their unborn child. Bobby Cutts Jr. offered a tearful apology in court today, and his mother, Renee Jones, pleaded that he be spared.
He was my firstborn, my only son, a son that could be proud to have. I never had any trouble out of him.
Cutts says he accepts responsibility, but insists he killed Jesse Davis by accident during an argument, panicked, and then dumped her body in a park. Prosecutors say he murdered Davis to avoid paying child support. The stock market was higher today. The Dow Industrial's up 189 points to 12,570. This is CBS News.
Brace yourselves, because I'm going to bring up a subject nobody likes to think about, buying a used car. I know, painful. Well, I've got a painless solution. Honda Certified Used Cars. Their well-maintained late-model Hondas each undergoes a 150-point inspection, then is backed with a 7-year, 100,000-mile limited powertrain warranty from the original in-service date and a 12-month, 12,000-mile limited non-powertrain warranty. They'll even provide a Carfax vehicle history report. Hey, it may be used, but it's still a Honda.
See dealer for limited warranty details.
Welcome to Chapman's Cheeses.
Yes, what do you recommend today?
Well, there's a special on forgotten expenses and disorganized sales figures. But I highly recommend the lingering invoicing. Very well aged.
Is running your business getting in the way of running your business? That's why millions of businesses rely on QuickBooks software to easily deal with routine chores, like tracking sales, organizing expenses, and creating invoices, so you can get back to what you do best.
This is a cheese shop, isn't it?
Yeah.
QuickBooks. Get back to business. Start today at QuickBooks.com.
A new medical study questions the use of antibiotics to treat dementia patients on the brink of death.
When someone's dying, choosing the right medical approach can be difficult and heart-wrenching. An Archives of Internal Medicine study finds 42% of nursing home dementia patients are on antibiotics in the last 2 weeks of life. In fact, antibiotics use increases substantially the closer patients get to death.
For many people at this stage of dementia, the goal is to promote comfort. It's never really been shown that these antimicrobials can do that.
And Harvard researcher Susan Mitchell suggests they may be causing a greater harm.
You're using antibiotics and promoting antimicrobial resistance, which is not only bad for the patients, but bad for the population of patients around them.
Barry Bagnetto, CBS News, Washington.
Until last night, the least watched Oscar show ever was in 2003. Preliminary ratings from Nielsen Media Research show most Americans were doing other things during this year's Oscar ceremony. The audience was 14% lower than 5 years ago. I'm Bill Whitney, CBS News.
Welcome to Chapman's Cheeses.
Yes, what do you recommend today?
Well, there's a special on forgotten expenses and disorganized sales figures, but I highly recommend the lingering invoicing. Very well aged.
Is running your business getting in the way of running your business? That's why millions of businesses rely on QuickBooks software to easily deal with routine chores, like tracking sales, organizing expenses, and creating invoices, so you can get back to what you do best.
This is a cheese shop, isn't it?
Yeah.
QuickBooks. Get back to business. Start today at QuickBooks.com.
Looking to diversify your portfolio? It's time to start trading foreign currencies at Forex.com. In these financial times, diversification is key. At Forex.com, we give you the tools you need to expand your investment portfolio beyond stocks and into the OTC foreign exchange market. Start trading foreign currencies 24 hours a day, 5 days a week. Go to Forex.com, open a free practice account today, and test your trading strategies risk-free. When you're ready, just click and trade. Forex.com.
Forex is an over-the-counter market and involves significant risk of loss.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. He's smart, funny, well-informed, opinionated, and mild-mannered, except when he's not. Welcome to Peter B.'s America.
Progressive talk radio with a beat. It's the Peter B. Collins Show. And it was Thomas Gangalli, a recent guest on the program, wrote an op-ed that appeared in Sunday's San Francisco Chronicle, describing your humble host as one of the most notorious lefties on the airwaves. I had no idea.
I feel so extraordinary. Something's got a hold on me. I get this feeling I'm in motion. A certain sense of liberty.
Notorious or not, this is what I love to do. I'm glad to be doing it. And this is my favorite part of the show, taking your phone calls. Who knows who will call and what they have to say? And will Mr. Collins have a brilliant rejoinder? Maybe not. Lines open for you in the free speech zone right now at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. You can always email me, Peter, at peterbcollins.com. All right, there are just a few things on my mind right now. Should Hillary Clinton step aside and acknowledge that the curve is too steep for her to prevail in the Democratic primary process? Or should she keep slugging it out, attacking Barack Obama for shameful mailers? Her words, not mine. And we now know that there is a link between the publication of an embarrassing photograph, or at least potentially embarrassing picture of Barack Obama in native garb on a trip to Africa, I think it was in Kenya. And I don't really think it's so deadly or damaging. But I just got word from BuzzFlash, a website you may be familiar with, that there is an existing connection between the Drudge Report, where this photograph was widely viewed today, and the Clinton campaign. The connection is a person named Tracy Seffel, S-E-F-L. And that Seffel had opened a friendly relationship with Drudge, and the Clinton campaign often works quietly through her to get material to Drudge, which can then be published, presumably, without direct linkage to the Clinton campaign. Now, you know my views. I believe Barack Obama is a better candidate, and I would like to see him ultimately win this nomination. And I side with Ed Schultz, who I think performed well on Hardball on Friday night. And while I don't think that Hillary is damaging the party necessarily by staying in the race, I think that by serving up this negative stuff against Obama, she is feeding ammunition to the McCain campaign for this fall. And I heard my friend Tom Hartman earlier today offering a different view. He said he thinks this is actually good because it'll get out now and kind of inoculate the public and make it more difficult for example, McCain to refer to Barack Hussein Obama. Well, I just don't agree with Tom on this because I believe that the longer this race stays in contention, the more money Democrats waste on an outcome that is pretty well known. Now, I would agree it's not guaranteed. And I think it's reasonable for Senator Clinton to stay in the race through Texas and Ohio on March 4th. But I believe the numbers are she has to win Texas by 60%, she has to win Ohio by 65% in order to stay in the game. And given the trends, that is unlikely. And my advice to the Clintons, if they want to stay in the campaign, is to keep it positive, run on her attributes, strengths, and proposals, and stop trying to drive up the negatives of the Obama campaign. It's not working. The mud is, you know, not sticking to him, and it is, I think, sticking to the boots of the Clintons. So, that's item number one. Should Hillary step aside? Let me know your thoughts. Number two, Ralph Nader went on Meet the Press yesterday and announced for the fourth time that he is a candidate for President of the United States. Too shy, I think, of the standing record held by Republican Harold Stassen, a little-known former governor of Minnesota who I believe ran for president six times, starting maybe in 1956. You got to check me on that one. So, I think Nader risks further irrelevance by running. And I welcome his contribution to the debate. I simply don't think he needs to be a candidate to offer points in the debate. And so he argues that he's kind of taking Dennis Kucinich's place in raising the issues of the war, the mismanagement of the economy, the huge disparity between the rich and the rest of us. All those are good topics, and I welcome Ralph Nader's contributions to those aspects of the debate. And I want to be very clear. Ralph Nader has the right to run, and anybody else has the right to run. And I would never say that they shouldn't attempt it. But after what happened in 2000, many people blame Ralph Nader for that. I tend to blame the Democrats more. I think they needed to do a better job of winning that election, particularly in Florida, and I believe that they did a bad job of the post-election litigation. That said, many progressives feel that Ralph Nader is an irritant, Ralph Nader is a spoiler, and Ralph Nader's an egomaniac. I think all of those are true. Finally, I want to know if you were able to view, either on delay or actually by leaving the Oscar coverage last night, 60 Minutes decided to run a powerful story about Don Siegelman. We've talked about his case many times on this program. Former Democratic governor of Alabama, and I believe a victim of Karl Rove's politicization of the U.S. attorney's offices, including the ones in Alabama. It was a pretty well-done piece. I give it a B. Didn't include all of the elements that have been previously reported by Larissa Alexandrovna at rawstory.com and Scott Horton in Harper's Magazine. But for a corporate media outlet, I think it was a good first stab. Scott Pelley did the piece. And I just got word that tonight on MSNBC, Dan Abrams, not my favorite gunslinger, will be approaching this topic as well. So it's good to see that people are paying attention to the Siegelman case. One interesting development, we have learned, and we attribute this to our friend Larissa Alexandrovna, that for some reason, for some unexplained reason, that last night, while the rest of the nation could turn to CBS and watch 60 Minutes, it was not available on a major station in Alabama, a station owned by people with close ties to the Bush administration. They first said, oh, we didn't get the transmission. And now I think they're saying nothing. But that makes a very, very interesting question that I don't have the answer to. But let's go to the phones and see what's on your mind today. First up, we go to line one, and I'm scrolling up to my screen to properly identify Eric in Orangevale. Hello, Eric.
Hey, Peter.
Thanks for calling.
Yeah, well, my main point was for the economy for our state. But, I like Nader. I think he's a lonely guy who wants some attention.
All right.
Poor thing. But regardless of that, with our problem that I'm seeing in our state is just too much law enforcement. We're killing schools. We're killing libraries. I'm trashing my trucks, alignments, and tires hitting roads.
Yep.
But I put on the news, and I see a dozen cops chasing down one guy who's 50 years old on foot. Or here's another good one. I mean, you go through a municipality, you got the city, the sheriffs, and the CHP all on surface roads, but if you're in the Bay Area, you never see that. We're spending too much money on law enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
And you know me. I mean, I've spoken to you before. I'm the one who said I fly with my pistol so I don't lose my bags when you had your one guest on.
Right. I remember.
Well, I bet. So, I mean, I vote. I'm a legal cat, so I have nothing against to worry about with law enforcement. My problem is just they're sucking down so much of our budget that they're trying to blame, like in Vallejo, law enforcement and firefighters. Well, I hate to say it, but the firefighters are the guys who are jumping on roofs, putting holes in it to put out fires. Cops, you turn around, you see like at least, when you see them pull over someone, what do you see? 5-6 cops?
Right.
With a car, with a woman?
Mm-hmm.
Why do you need to see that much? You don't. It's getting old. It's getting tiring. They're sucking down our budget. We have too much law enforcement.
Well, Eric, I think you raise a very interesting point. There's no question that we're spending a lot on law enforcement and that cops and firefighters get very generous pensions. Some of that was originally to offset the low salaries that they received.
Not anymore.
But most of those salaries have been bumped up to pretty healthy levels over the last decade or so.
Third highest in the nation.
Eric, the problem we run into is that the cops and the firefighters are extremely well organized. Did you know that the Firefighters Union has its own television studio in Sacramento where they crank out commercials for political campaigns and sometimes do communications favors for politicians that they support?
Which time, when they did support Schwarzenegger or when they don't support him?
Well,
take your pick.
I can't.
It's like the prison guards. They supported him to get elected, then when he didn't want to give him everything, they didn't support him.
Yeah.
I mean, we're just, it seems like...
Well, they use their power very effectively, and I'm glad you know about the prison guards, because most people are unaware of the vast influence that they wield in Sacramento, and you're exactly right.
Well, I got a buddy who works in Folsom Prison. He's trying to get me a job there, but I'm like, I don't really see that as a long-term job because I see California going strap. I would end up losing my job. See what's going to happen.
The prison industry is going to be there, Eric, but find a better line of work because it's not healthy for you.
They're shutting down the project because I'm a commercial electrician, and the prisons they've had on the books, they're getting pulled now.
Yeah. All right, Eric, got to run to a break. Thanks for your call. Thanks for holding on so I could take your call. And we'll take a break here and return for more of your calls. We call it the Free Speech Zone. 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. I'm glad you're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show. KRXA 540, progressive talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. The Carmel Valley Market is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Carmel Valley residents can now easily access the tradition of service and quality made famous by the Higuera family at the Grove Market in Pacific Grove. The Carmel Valley Market features the finest selection of fresh local fruits and veggies, as well as a full-service old-fashioned meat counter with USDA choice cuts. And don't forget the deli, with delicious fresh sandwiches made to order. The Carmel Valley Market is located at 2 Chambers Lane, just behind Wells Fargo in Carmel Valley Village. Let the Carmel Valley Market's professional staff meet all of your grocery needs. Stop by and say hello to Ian and Gary Higuera, members of Charlie's family. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares. Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
Checking traffic on KRXA. One new accident for you. Northbound 101 after Old Stage Road. Couple of cars. It looks like they're both off to the shoulder. CHP's on the way, and they're already calling for a tow truck to head out to the scene. Couple of stalls out there to tell you about. Aptos Hills, Marmonte Avenue, and Highway 1. It's blocking one of the lanes. Unsure which. CHP's on the way. Also in Watsonville, Estrella Avenue at Playa Boulevard, we have a stall that's blocking one of the lanes there. Highway 17, as you make your way through the Santa Cruz Mountains, no problems to tell you about right now. The Fish Hook, southbound 17, on to southbound on Highway 1, you are going to see that everyday heavy traffic there. Van Lomond, northbound 9, Middle Road out to Western Avenue. Road construction, that's tying up the left lane until the end of this month, so that's going to cause delays there. And this is brought to you by the California Public Utilities Commission. Call CalPhone Info at 1-800-818-5009 for free information to help you get smarter about telephone services provided by the California Public Utilities Commission. I'm Nate Nix, and that's traffic on KRXA.
It's time for more on the Peter B. Collins Show. Well, when Karl Rove's running the law, you can be sure that the law is going to win. I dedicate that one to former Governor Don Siegelman of Alabama. Finally starting to get some media attention. But hey, what's up with CBS? They get a great story, an exclusive, and they decide to run it opposite the Academy Awards when they know large audiences would not be watching. What does that tell us? Jen's in Sacramento. Welcome, Jen. You're on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hi, Pete. Hi, Peter.
Hi.
The first thing I'm going to say is, what? Really quick, what if King George doesn't want to leave the throne? I mean, he breaks all the laws. I mean, he has everybody, including the Supreme Court, in his pocket. What if he says he doesn't want to leave? What are we going to do?
You mean he's going to pull a Musharraf on us and declare martial law? I mean, we know he wouldn't bounce anybody off the Supreme Court except maybe Ruth Bader Ginsburg and Souter, who his dad appointed and has disappointed the Republicans. But to your point, I heard a very interesting report this morning that the U.S. and Canada, in the middle of February, signed a mutual aid agreement. And it says if there's a big crisis in the United States, that we can ask Canadian troops to come and help us out, and vice versa. And what's interesting about this is that Canada apparently signed the agreement but has not announced it to the Canadian public. And the U.S. has somehow revealed it, but this was the first that I've heard of it. And so when you link that together with so many other issues, the National Security Memo 51 that was published last year that talks about martial law situations in the United States and many others, there's reason for this concern, Jen. It's not just, you know, free-floating tin hat conspiracy theories.
Right, and I agree with that. Now, in regards to the budget, what I don't understand about our legislators is that they refuse to go after companies and the rich to resolve the issue. Our municipalities, SMUD, PG&E, even the telephone companies, have record-high profits. We have rich people. We have even, you know, the Maloof brothers that I mentioned before. And yet our government refuses to get money from from the entities that can take care of the problem and resolve it now, and they run on the backs of the poor. And so I'm just not understanding why we cannot address that issue with them.
Well, if we had public financing for elections, we could cut out the role of corporate contributions in funding campaigns and the political parties. And we had John Laird on last hour, and I have a lot of respect for John, but I don't share his rosy view of Speaker Nunez. I believe that he has been rapacious in his courting of California corporate interests and the giveaway to AT&T to permit them to deliver video over your phone line had the additional consequence of voiding most of the contracts that are in place between, say, your county and the cable company that has the franchise to deliver cable services. And those contracts come with obligations. The cable company has to provide public access, and there are a number of other things that they're supposed to do. Well, this law that Nunez wrote earned $1 million contribution from AT&T shortly after it passed with no opposition in the lower house, and I think only two senators voted against it in the upper house. And it's a stinky bill. It's a special interest giveaway that if you don't like Comcast, you know, you might think it's all right. But in the narrow sense, this is one of those reasons why they continue to service these large corporate interests. It's because they can dump big money into campaigns.
I agree. Well, thank you so much, Peter, for everything that you do.
You bet, Jen. Always good to hear from you. Mike in Fair Oaks, welcome.
Yes, well, you're notoriously well-informed, Peter, and I thank you for it.
Okay, thank you.
Just to segue to something I'd like to talk about, I got an email from Dianne Feinstein.
Yeah.
And I had addressed through a couple of different avenues the telecommunications immunity issue. And this email, I'd like to read the first paragraph to you.
All right.
Because this says so much about this senator who we must get rid of. Thank you for writing regarding the Bush administration's request for legislation that would provide immunity for telecommunication companies that are alleged to have provided assistance to the National Security Agency after September 11th, 2001.
Well,
I appreciate your thoughts on this topic and welcome the opportunity. And there's five more paragraphs of bull.
Well, Mike, what you just read had three inaccuracies.
I counted two, but anyway.
Well, first of all, you know, it's not really the Bush administration's bill. Jay Rockefeller wrote it, and Dianne Feinstein's been there, you know, urging him on all along. So that's not true. The alleged part, you know, that might be lawyering, but it's not really in dispute. And what was the third thing in there?
Well, I didn't pick up on a third thing, but...
All right. Hey, Mike, I got to go to a break, and the screen says you wanted to talk about Siegelman, too. So why don't you hold on through the break, and we'll bring you back for a second take.
Thank you.
All right. That's straight ahead. Got lines open. Want to hear from you. 888-573-8372.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Hi, I'm Patty Ross, Realtor. What pops into your mind when you hear the word real estate? Security? Investment? White picket fences? Did you know that real estate is the single most sought-after asset on the planet? More people have accumulated wealth through real estate than by any other means. So whether you own property and want to cash in your equity or simply want to take advantage of buying in this changing market, you need a qualified agent who understands market conditions and will listen to your needs. From Santa Cruz to Salinas, from Carmel to Big Sur, call me, Patty Ross, for a free consultation. I'm hardworking, experienced, and I care about you. Hey, forget the rest, get the best. Call me, Patty Ross. My heart's in it.
Contact Patty Ross at Keller Williams Realty in Carmel at 622-6235. That's 622-6235, or visit her website, pattyrosscarmel.com.
Hi there, KRXA listeners. This is Hal on behalf of the Central Avenue Bakery. Tina and her staff want to thank all of you for becoming regulars at the Central Avenue Bakery at 173 Central Avenue in beautiful Pacific Grove. February is a special month at the Central Avenue Bakery as they celebrate Valentine's Day with an Italian buffet and a free glass of wine with every dinner. Space is limited, so make your reservations for Valentine's Day now. Then, at the end of February, Central Avenue Bakery celebrates its third anniversary with live music, free food, and prizes. Enjoy organic foods, pastries, and coffee. They also have a gluten-free menu and many organic gluten-free pastries. Stop by one of my favorite restaurants, the Central Avenue Bakery in Pacific Grove, today.
Do you want some downtime? A break from work and worry without breaking the bank? At the Dunes and the Spa at Pajaro Dunes in Watsonville will give you the breathing space you need. The Spa at Pajaro Dunes is now open to the general public. Spend an hour being pampered with a warm stone massage or European facial. Gather your friends together for a spa party or surprise your sweetie with a couples massage. Stay for a long, lazy weekend in a luxurious condo at the dunes with 150 acres of beach and wetlands. You'll have your own ocean view, and the price is unbeatable. Only a short drive from anywhere on the Central Coast, relief is only minutes away without the time and expense of a long trip. We'll also simplify your wedding plans. Have your ceremony, guests, and special events all in the same place. In nearby Watsonville, at the dunes and the spa at Pajaro Dunes will make your life a little easier and a lot more enjoyable. Call 888-91-DUNES and mention KRXA to get our lowest rates. That's 888-91-DUNES.
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, the host of the new show, curiously enough, called The Scott Dick Show, weekdays following the Peter B. Collins Show. Every evening from 6 to 8 p.m., we'll talk about local and regional issues, national and international politics, military and veterans affairs, and anything else that hasn't been lip-smacked to death already. So hang around after the Peter B. Collins Show and tune in to the gift you just can't return, The Scott Dick Show, weekdays 6 to 8 p.m., where I'll shoot from the lip and take no prisoners.
Locally owned, the Ugly Mug Coffee House in SoCal Village. Always lively, always wired. We serve the best organic, shade-grown coffees, loose-leaf teas, original bar drinks, and delectable goodies in friendly community atmosphere. Open every day, 6 a.m. till 9 p.m., complete with music, Wi-Fi, and the craziest regulars in Santa Cruz. Meet your friends or just bring yourself to the Ugly Mug, SoCal Drive at Porter Street, for lively conversations and the best cappuccino in town. Hey, what do you want? Rare frickin' sunshine? Delicious.
The Ugly Mug, SoCal Drive and Porter Street in SoCal.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. He's smart, funny, well-informed, opinionated, and mild-mannered, except when he's not. Welcome to Peter B.'s America.
Do you think Hillary should step aside? Or do you think they should play out the primary process to the end? It's the Free Speech Zone.
I can't take it no more.
Any Nader fans out there?
You know you lied about the casualties. You know you lied about the WFG. You know you lied about the detainees. I know, but this wild. Stop talking about staying because you keep on beating that old dead horse. You know you lied about how we went to war. I can't take it no more. Ow.
Lines open for you in the Free Speech Zone. I really want to hear from Hillary Clinton supporters. Do you think I'm off base to say that the numbers show that it's time for her to step aside? After all, John Edwards got out of the race based on his own estimation of the numbers earlier than many supporters would have wanted. So I'd like to hear your thoughts right now.
But you never saw the old school yard.
888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. Tomorrow, Tuesday, MSNBC will host a debate from Ohio, including Clinton and Obama. We have approached MSNBC. We're asking for approval to rebroadcast the audio of that debate. And if they give us approval, we'll do it. And it'll come up at 5 o'clock Pacific time. That's when it's scheduled to start from Ohio. And so just tune in to find out if we're able to pull that off. I'm hopeful, but never know what corporate media will say. Maybe they're on to this notorious lefty, and who knows. We return now to Mike in Fair Oaks, who hadn't completed his comment. He had read us a letter from Senator Feinstein's office with some very misleading statements in it regarding the efforts to reform the FISA law and to grant immunity to the phone companies. And, Mike, if you would indulge me a little more with the Feinstein letter, does she ultimately say reasons why she supports the amnesty?
Yeah, she does. The third element in her first paragraph was after September 11th, and you know, we all know that this stuff all started before September 11th.
Well, you and I know, Mike, but a lot of people who read, you know, just the average newspaper or watch television still continue to believe that this started after 9/11. You and I know it's not true. Quest was approached in late February or March of 2001.
Well, to answer your question, she surmises in this letter that she hopes that the House and the Senate bill will be worked out, and an alternative to full telecom immunity including strong language on the exclusivity of FISA, be established. And she falls back on using the FISA courts to make determinations about our Fourth Amendment rights.
Yeah, I'd rather send it to the newly packed Pakistani Supreme Court.
Well, I see your point.
We might get a more honest reading.
This letter is really disgraceful, and I really don't